We're going to call the meeting to order of the Government Services Committee. First item on the agenda is we're going to have a roll call.
Senator Sorvog.
Here.
Carlisle.
Yes.
Marcelet. O'Connell.
Aye.
Representatives Lauzer.
Here.
Brabant.
Here.
Froseth. Crichella. Holman. Carls. Kaiser.
Here.
Kroon.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Pollard.
Aye.
Steiner.
Here.
Wieland. Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
Thank you, and thank everybody for coming. We'll do the next item, a consideration of the minutes.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the April 2nd minutes. Is there any discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Minutes are approved. Well, I'm going to start out, well, first of all, to thank General Spitznagle and Colonel French and the rest of everybody for all the great work in inviting us up here. We had a great time last night, and it sounds like we got an interesting afternoon ahead of us, so, and it looks like we got a beautiful day for it, so we're going to, we're looking forward. We've got a tight schedule this morning. We wanted to cover all these issues and get them in and allow plenty of time to do the other activities. I think there's a few legislators that are going to be joining us this afternoon that aren't part of the committee. I don't know how many, three, four, that are coming up for this afternoon, too, so it should be fun. But before we go on to the next item on the agenda, I'm going to give the General just a couple minutes. He wanted to say something.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, members of the committee. It's certainly an honor for us to host you today. For those of you here that were here last night, push the button.
All right. Same thing as back in Bismarck, okay.
Yeah.
For the record, my name is Dave Spitznagle, Adjutant General for the State of North Dakota, and, you know, thank you for being here. For us, it's a real honor to host you. For those of you that were here last night, I hope you had a good time. I think it was a very pleasant and beautiful evening. I know for some of you, this is your first time to Camp Grafton. For some of you, I know your father came here for more than 30 years every summer and spent 2 weeks away from home. And that's what many of our soldiers do. They have the opportunity to train here or train elsewhere, and in all instances, we train to go to war. We train to provide for support to the governor here at home. Camp Grafton, you know, is a beautiful facility. It, you know, yesterday you heard, some of you heard about the history of it. It goes back, you know, to nearly the time of statehood. And, you know, since the late 1800s, the North Dakota National Guard has, you know, has had this as its home for training. It is a first-class facility. You'll see that this afternoon, and it's supported by first-class soldiers and airmen. We have, you know, we pride ourselves in saying we have the best National Guard. You have the best National Guard anywhere in the country, and part of that is because of Camp Grafton. This is a state-owned facility. Some of the buildings are federally owned. You know, many of them have been paid for with federal dollars, but we manage, we control them, and, you know, we have a lot of activity here throughout the year. This is the period of time when a lot of our soldiers from across the state come for their annual training, but as you'll hear later, this is a, you know, this facility is run 365 days a year. We have more than, you know, about 5,000 soldiers that, you know, come and go throughout the course of the year for various types of training. So, you know, please enjoy the day. As the chairman said, we have a lot on the schedule for you. We want you to, you know, to learn more about Camp Grafton and more about your National Guard. And throughout the day, don't hesitate to, you know, visit with any of our soldiers, airmen, men and women in uniform about who they are, you know, what they do, and I hope they'll tell you they enjoy being in the National Guard. I will tell you that some of the soldiers that are here today are from out of state. Last night I ran into a group from Hawaii, and they're here training. Their mission is changing. They're becoming engineers, and they said they thoroughly were enjoying themselves. The training was great, and they love North Dakota and Camp Grafton. So, unless there are any questions of me, I'll turn it back to you, and we'll be here throughout the day to support you, and if you need anything, don't hesitate to ask.
Okay, thank you, General, and thank you again to all the Guard members and your people.
You're welcome.
Okay, then we're going to move right into the agenda, the items on the agenda to keep things moving along, and the first thing on is a update on the status of the service dog training programs by representatives of the Department of Veterans Affairs. So, Lonnie, I'll let you start it out, and whoever you're going to have address the issues.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Lonnie Wongan, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, the state of North Dakota. I do have some handouts here. First part of the agenda, Mr. Chairman, as you requested, update on Service Dogs for America. We would hope to have Pamela standing here today to give an update with one of her dogs. She was unfortunately unable to make it here. So I'm going to give a little update on where they're at. The Service Dogs of America group has four dogs trained and ready for North Dakota veterans. On May 23rd, 2014, the Friday prior to Memorial Day, we sent out a press release announcing the availability of this grant for veterans with PTSD. That's on the back side of this piece of paper is the press release that we had. The press release directed applicants to North Dakota Department of Veterans Affairs website for more information and application packets. Our website provided these documents and the links to the SDA Service Dogs for America website. Dozens of applications have been mailed out by SDA. And an unknown number of applicants have also downloaded them. We're currently waiting for the pre-applications to be submitted. Only a handful of applications have been received in the first 3 weeks since the press release was posted. Several news stations have done stories and interviewed the Service Dogs for America personnel. The Service Dogs of America representatives are sorry they could not be at today's meeting and would really like to be invited to the next meeting. They would like to bring one of the dogs and hopefully a veteran that has been utilizing a service dog. They do have a veteran in North Dakota that has a service dog, and it's changed his life, and he's actually excited to come here, which is a monumental thing for this person who didn't want to leave his home or be around people. So they would really like to have him at your next meeting if you have time for that. And again, we apologize for not being here. A little bit on the statistics on the number of applications they send out, and they do serve the whole country. And when they send out applications, they figure they get less than 10% will actually come back. And what they find is a lot of the veterans or other people that are utilizing or considering this get overwhelmed with the idea, don't feel worthy of it, have a hard time filling out themselves. So we're working with the VA, the vet centers, and the service officers in the state to reach out to those that they know are interested in these dogs and to actually help them fill out the paperwork, just the pre-application to get it in. I talked to a service officer last night, and she says she's got two veterans that she knows of that really need one of these dogs and have been hesitant. They've got the paperwork and haven't put it in, so she's actually going to help them fill it out. And that's just the pre-app to show that they're interested and have a need. And there's a little bit of a role behind that after they received that pre-app. So
when you say send them out, you send them out to all veterans, or is it a pre-selected group that you feel would be qualified?
Mr. Chairman, this is people who have called in and requested that to be mailed out.
Okay.
You can also download them. So those that have called in and asked them to be mailed out, there's been many dozens that have been mailed out.
But there's probably a lot of veterans that still haven't quite figured out that it's available, or do you think you've reached out?
We've reached out pretty good. There's been a lot of news media coverage across the state in newspapers, and there's been quite a few TV stations that have done segments on that for their news. So it's gotten out pretty good. They've gotten lots of calls, and unfortunately they don't really have a tracking method of how many people have downloaded their application, but they said they've mailed out several dozens. So
do you have any idea when you think the first dog will be assigned, any at all, or where?
We are really hoping and optimistic that we can get the dogs assigned and with veterans before October. And that includes their 60 days of training and everything that goes with it.
So this committee probably will meet two more times before the October 1st deadline.
Okay.
So there would be a possibility of getting a more detail, you know, how many really did
right.
come in. I know you can't control that end.
Yeah.
And
the hopes are, yeah, we would have the total number of applicants and how many were qualified by October.
Okay.
Hopefully
soon. That's the hope. Somewhere in a report we can have that information, because that
Absolutely.
Is one of our charges to come up with. So.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Yep.
Okay. Is there any other questions for Lonnie? Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, Lonnie, who does the training?
These dogs are actually trained in Kansas in a prison on the first social skills. It was like the five social skills that a dog needs just for regular obedience training. And then they come up to North Dakota and they go through all the different trainings that are available right there in Judd, North Dakota. And they'll go through their basic service dog training. And then after that, they become the PTSD training, where they actually go through how to treat, how to work with somebody with PTSD and their different issues that they might have need help with. So it's about a year of pretty good intense training for these dogs before they're available.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's really, that, thank you for the answer. It was interesting, at least to me, that when we visited the Jamestown Correctional Center, they were doing dog training there. And I guess the question is, have we investigated the feasibility of moving that training to our prison system? Because it seems to have a therapeutic effect on a lot of those prisoners. And maybe we could become the center or something like that. Have we investigated that, or is that outside the scope of this program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, actually, Pamela Standing with Service Dogs of America has been working with Jamestown and the Bismarck facility and the women's prison to try to get that program going in there. So she's very optimistic she can get a lot more out of North Dakota.
Is there any other questions for Lonnie? If not, thank you, and we will make time in our next meetings for reports on this, because this is an important item.
Appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
We will definitely make room to keep updated as we go along.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as the veterans education training,
yep, we'll move on to that.
That'll be provided over here, so.
Okay, well, we're going to move on to, if we're done with the PTSD dogs, we'll move on to the higher education assistant program. And this is a pretty exciting program. Whoever's going to update it, come on up to the podium. And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Vodran, and I'm project coordinator for Veterans Educational Training. And with me is Ida Martinez Freeman, who is TRIO director and director of BET. I want to thank you for allowing us to come in and give you the update that we have. The handout that's being passed out right now is what I'm basically going to be going over, along with the brochure that we're currently using. Brief history of the program. We came before the legislature and asked for some funding to get this program implemented. We had previously been funded under the federal government, and that funding went away. So the 1st of September was when we received the funding, and we were allocated $325,000. That money was allocated through the university system and then through NDSU to us. Our students that we have, we did an average of all of them that we have been working with. The average age of most of our participants are 53. The beginning reading level for most of them is 11th grade. Math is 10th grade, and language is 10.1. Our first students started in September 1st. Four of them in Grand Forks, two of them in Fargo, where our two classrooms are located. And of those, two of them have already gone into a post-secondary college program. What we have been able to do is currently we're serving 40 people. 23 of them are brand new, 16 continuing from the old program, and one was a re-entry. He had previously been under the old program, came back to brush up his skills with us. We've also put together agreements, memorandums of understanding with different institutions here in the state, one of them with Wahpeton at NDSCS, one with the University of Mary, and with Minot State University, and we're currently working with Lake Region Community College. The purpose of that is so that we can extend our availability to the veterans statewide, which is very difficult to do when our two locations for classrooms are on the east side. Some of the difficulties that we've run into and what we've discovered is we've been offering online courses statewide, and the veterans are not acclimating very well to that. Those who don't have computer skills are having difficulty trying to teach themselves computers online. And those who have difficulties with PTSD or TBI or similar issues are having trouble staying focused. So relying on them to strictly go online and try to stay scheduled is proving to be very difficult. So one of the things that we're going to try and implement now is to get connected through the university system's IMAN program. So it's going to be an interactive program. They'll be able to sit in classrooms at these different schools and see the instructor, be able to ask the questions, see what needs to be done. And the instructor's going to be able to monitor them, their progress, keep them focused, and keep them moving upward. Other difficulties we had to do a reduction in staff as a result of what the funding level was. We went from 3 full-time positions to 1 3/4. We're also finding some hesitancy of, when it comes to partnering with the different institutions, they're a little hesitant to commit because we are only funded for one biennium at this point. They'll be more comfortable if we can get under a permanent funding status so that they can actually make that commitment. The other issue that we're running into is the need. Under the definition of what a veteran is, there is a population out there that is not being served, and that's with the National Guard. For those who have never deployed, they don't follow under that definition of what a veteran is. So we have a group of military personnel who cannot work with our program because they have yet to deploy or they have not deployed. And that group has an especially high number of levels of students that are going on academic probation or academic suspension. So there is a core group there that we really need to try to reach out to if possible. What we're trying to do, we're keeping track of the contacts that we've received since September. And just to give you kind of a cross-section, we've received 10 contacts wanting to know about the GI benefits. 3 of them are trying to get their DD-214 discharge papers. We've had 16 inquiries about getting into our program, and most of our information is coming by word of mouth. There have been calls into MDSCS, to University of Mary, Minot State. A lot of our time is also spent coaching these individuals who come in. Do they know where they want to go? Do they know what they want to do? Do they know what that process is? How do we get them into an admissions process? How do we get them funding? So there's a lot of the coaching that we do besides the actual educational component. So one of the things that we're trying to do is we're hoping in the future that we can add additional classrooms and not rely quite so heavily on the online or the IVAN program. We're wanting to get connected with more of the schools in the state to provide these services and so that these veterans have a place to go where they can actually be on the campus, get the feel of the culture, kind of assimilate into what that whole life is going to be like. See if it's a good fit. Find out if they need to be on a large university or if they need to go to a smaller 2-year or a certification program, whatever is going to be the better fit for them. We're hoping also now to ramp up our marketing. We were very conservative and very cautious with our funding. We weren't sure how this was going to stretch this first year. So now that we know what our budget is, we're going to be going considerably deeper into the marketing aspect of it and getting the word out more across the state. We're looking at the potential of getting into and working in a cooperation with the prison system in the minimum security areas. We're looking at, they have good programs that get them up to that high school level, but part of what we do is to get them from that high school level into the college level, and they don't have that availability to them as well. So we're looking at helping through our IVAN program again, advising on admissions processes and registration and financial aid and all of the things that go with that. We're also going to work in a cooperative effort with job service for those who need to go directly to get jobs. How do you do a resume? How do you do an interview? How do you do cover letters? What's appropriate techniques for interviewing? What's appropriate garments that you wear? All of these things that they don't have access to right now. Hopefully we can get them, if they're going to be in there for 2 years or so, we can get them started on a college program where they're starting to pick up classes and they're already learning the study skills and everything that they need to, so that when they get out, they can get into a college program, get their lives turned around, become successful citizens, and get better paying jobs. And that way they can pay that debt to society that they owe. at our last count, there is approximately 50 veterans out there that we could potentially tap into in that market itself. We know that there's going to be some more deployments coming up, so we know that there are going to be more veterans coming back into the state who are going to want to utilize their benefits and go on to school. So we're looking through the Guard itself. There's 100 of them deployed approximately right now. In Air Guard, there's 313. We know that there's going to be a future deployment coming up. I just heard on the news this morning that one out of Dickinson is going to be going out in 2015. So we're trying to find the best way that we can to serve the veterans that we have here in our state and help them get that educational goal that they need to go on and get good paying jobs. It's just trying to find a way of how we're going to do it and do it statewide. Any questions?
The amount you got, the $325,000, was the $548,000 you requested what you had anticipated if they hadn't closed the federal program down?
Yes.
Then that's what you would have gotten then?
That's what we would have gotten.
And this VA Chapter 1606 requirement, that's a carryover from the federal program then?
That's one of the benefit descriptions. It's the same as you have a Chapter 30, which is the old Montgomery GI. You have the Chapter 33, which is the post 9/11. Chapter 31 is the VA vocational rehab. So you have a 1607, which is those that have deployed from the Guard or Reserve status, and then you have the 1606, which are the non-deployed. And those are the ones that don't fit the legal definition of what a veteran is.
Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I understand that they don't qualify if it's federally funded, but if the state's funding it, why can't we make the decision that they qualify?
Mr. Chairman, the way the bill was written, it was designated that it was for veterans. And so under the legal definition, under the state of what constitutes a veteran, that small group does not fit.
So it's our state law that said veterans. And
the way it was implemented in the bill that awarded us this funding. So if there's a way that we can make an adjustment on that to incorporate that, then that would be wonderful.
So this is a, or maybe you're not the one to ask this question, but this is a unique, that they're not determined to be veterans for this program and they're veterans for other programs?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that whenever you put the term veteran on, and looking at the federal definition as well as the state definition, 1606 does not meet that criteria.
I'm going to ask Lonnie to step up a minute. Lonnie, is that for all your programs, this definition, and of veterans? I guess I didn't realize.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I believe it's 3740. Is it 3701.40 is a definition of veteran, and there's also one in 3714, and that one has to do with the grant program. But in the North Dakota Century Code 3701.40, that is pretty much the same as the federal definition, and in there it says you've served 180 days or the full amount that you've been activated for other than training, and that's where they get it, because if you're in the National Guard and you went to basic training, you get a DD-214, it says training on there, that does not qualify you as a veteran. Your annual trainings, your weekend drills, you don't get a DD-214, and that time doesn't add up to make you a veteran. So on those two definitions, that doesn't qualify for a veteran for pretty much any benefits. Okay. Federal or state.
Representative Kaiser.
But just to clarify, regular military, they qualify. This is just specific to the National Guard, right?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kaiser, yes, your active Guard and Reserve members that are on active duty, they can be considered veterans. Your people out at the Air Force are considered veterans on different aspects of the benefits to the VA. Yes, if you've just been an M-Day and have not been deployed.
So if in the future the legislature would want this to be included to Guard members that aren't considered veterans, we'd have to define that in each bill, I would presume, or any program.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, under the education, under Century Code, there's a definition in there for those that are available for the resident tuition, and that includes the National Guard, the Reserve and stuff. So the definition, the way that's written out, would definitely make a difference on this bill.
Jerry, is there any questions for the, we're done now, Lonnie. I wanted to get a clarification, you know, to make sure we're.
Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Jerry? Representative Bravo.
Chairman, does this also encompass the GED program?
Mr. Chairman, no. We used to at one time incorporate the GED program, but under the requirements now for people to get into the military, they have to have a high school or a GED before they come in. So it really doesn't make a lot of sense to duplicate.
I was wondering about that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any other questions? I appreciate this report. You know, we hadn't brought this in before in front of this committee, and I was at an event with Lonnie at NDSU, and they were talking, there were some veterans talking about different education benefits programs and things going on and how it helped them out. And that's kind of where we thought this got, we have to have a report what's going on with this, because this is a critical thing. It's a lot of money that the state committed. But I do appreciate the time and the report as we go forward.
Thank you.
Representative Kroon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick question is, how many people are in this position that do not have the benefits but provided the service in the National Guard? How many people are we talking about? Do you know? Roughly. You don't have, I mean, just a rough idea.
Mr. Chairman, and this is purely just an estimate, and I can only take the guess off from what I know statistics are at UND and NDSU.
Yep.
But I believe there's 15 or 20 that are on academic suspension right now, and somewhere around another 15 or 20 that are on probation.
So if we would consider 100 students,
When you incorporate the rest of the schools and think about
it. It's not a huge number is what I guess what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Is there any other questions? If not, thank you for the report.
Thank you.
Come on. We're doing pretty good. We're staying right on time.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, could we have legislative council staff research that question and see where the term veteran is being applied to benefits within our state that we would have an impact over potentially, and come back to at our next meeting with that information?
I think that's a very good request, because that's a little where my question too. I mean, if it's something state only and the legislature intended it to maybe go to Guard members too, then we probably should research that and be part of the report, because then we'd be conscious of the fact that we better include it in the legislation or they're not going to be included, if that's the intent. Okay, so if you guys want to just bring that to the next, one of the next two meetings. Okay, with that, we'll move on. General?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Al Dorman. I'm the Deputy Adjutant General for the North Dakota National Guard. I'm here today to provide an update on our progress in meeting the requirements of Senate Bill 2210. At the last hearing, I informed the committee that our intention was to meet with NDSU History Department to partner with them to get the mandate of this bill executed. We met with Dr. Tom Isor. I can't pronounce his name, but he's a very smart guy. And he's a professor of history at NDSU. And we discussed trying to get a little scope of what it would take to get this project done. The good news is we found out that it would be a good project for graduate students. I found out they work incredibly cheap, because what they really want is fee waiver, so they only care about how much they get paid. And he also has some experience in the micro-publishing business, and this would probably fall in that category of not producing a lot of volumes. So he thought it could be done economically. With that said, the $50,000 provided by the legislature will not get us any books printed. What we have done this time, after meeting with Dr. Tom and his staff, we've talked about the terms that we would put in a request for proposal. We have prepared a draft of that. I've attached that to my testimony today as far as what would be the requirements for the information to be researched. And again, based on the bill, the first part of the bill tells or directs the Adjutant General to write and publish this book. The second half talks about ensuring that we have a good cost of what that would be before we initiate that. Our intent is to issue the request for proposal to NDSU yet this month. If this committee would like us to come back again, and I heard the chairman say we probably have a couple more meetings, we should be in a position by this fall to provide a good cost estimate of what it would take to complete this project. The $50,000 provided, from what I was told by NDSU, that could get the research and the ball rolling as far as gathering the information. But that's where we stand right now, Mr. Chairman. Again, we anticipate this is really two projects. One is to continue the record of veterans in North Dakota since statehood, and we've had those volumes printed around major conflicts, but they stopped in 1975. And the other intent by this body was to have an accounting of all KIAs and MIAs since statehood. And we see that as two different things, continuing what we have done in the past and then probably a standalone narrative volume for the KIAs and MIAs since statehood. And that's how we're submitting the request for proposal to approach it in that manner. One of the reasons we haven't finalized it yet is some of the things we're talking about in the last hearing. Definitions will be important so that we get it right as far as who should be in the book. So definition of veteran, definition of killed in action, definition of killed in service. We have to make sure we get those definitions right so when they do their research, like I said, this is one of those things you want to get right the first time.
You're also the definition of a North Dakota.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
It's something you need to work on, too.
Yes.
If they're native or moved or how long or...
And then it'll be, Mr. Chairman, it'll be... This might be one of those things where it'll be almost impossible to make everybody happy, but if we do our homework, pick our definition, be able to defend it, I think that's the best we can do.
Have you found, has this been done in other states? There's a veteran I know in our, from Iowa, and he said he's in one from down there. He served in the Vietnam. Well, he served since that, but he said they limit theirs to native-born.
Mr. Chairman, I know it's been done in other states, and I know the for the KIA MIA portion of this book, I think that was inspired by something that was done in South Dakota. We haven't really checked into what other states have done. You know, from my perspective, continuing what we've done in the past on the record of veterans, you know, we should just follow that example of what we've done in the past. The KIA MIA, we can do some checking to see what else might be out there. What we envision right now, though, is it would be more of a narrative format, not just strictly stats, born here, raised here, went to school here, died in Omaha Beach, but more of a narrative story, a little more personal about what that veteran or who that veteran was.
And we talked after you testified or last on the side, we talked about the fact of, I asked you if you thought there'd be possibilities of sponsorship or, you know, investment, and you said you'd need authority from the legislature before you could approach that.
Mr. Chairman, I believe so, because without specific authority for the Adjutant General to accept monies, private monies for that, I don't think we could do it. With that authority, and that's something we could talk about in the fall if we get a better idea of what the price would be.
Well, it's just something I think that should be part of the discussion. Yes. I mean, is spending our dollars, I mean, state dollars too, but we've got a lot of industries and businesses that might be willing to be partners in something like that to help it happen if all you're lacking is the authority to approach them and accept it. But I think it should be some of the discussion going on.
Okay. Sure.
Representative Lauser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions. First of all, how do I address you? You've got a lot of titles.
Al's fine.
We seem to be very formal, so Al, the $50,000 short of publishing 100 books, would that get us the information and the research that we're looking for?
Representative Lauser, Mr. Chairman, I don't think it'll complete the project. As I said, the graduate students work very cheap, but just in spitballing this with NDSU, it could be a graduate assistant on the road to county seats, checking veterans' records. There may be a requirement to go down to St. Louis and check in and get access to the federal database, however that might work. So they anticipate windshield time. Just the process of entering the data. And when I talked with them, part of my hope was NDSU would have fancy-dancy computers where you could just pull from databases, scan things in, collate it, and everything would come off pretty. We don't have that, but I assume they do. And I think they do have some of that capability. But this still is a lot of data entry. And there probably is some point where you're not hiring graduate students and waiving fees anymore. You're hiring regular students or other folks to do data entry, which will be time-consuming. I think that'll eat up that 50 grand pretty quick.
I may continue. And second question, currently the books that we saw during the session and potentially the 100 published books now, where would they go? Where are they stored?
Representative Lazar, Mr. Chairman, we don't know. We're checking into that. We have in our office, I'm guessing the state, various state offices have them. I don't know if public libraries have them. The 100 was a number we made up for the purposes of moving the ball forward while we look into where would these likely reside. And if we can get a good handle on where the books have gone in the past, I think we'll just take our best estimate of where they need to go with state offices and maybe through the counties and others. The KIA MIA book, there may be some interest in the, from the public in purchasing a book like that if they have a loved one in there. And I think we'll have to do the micro-publishing look at you know, what our options are for second and third runs with money received from folks that want to buy them. You know, maybe through the historical the new building we built at the Capitol there, the Heritage Center, thank you for helping me out in the back row there. You know, it might be a book that would be on sale there.
Okay. Is there any other questions? If not, then we'll just wait for an update for one more at least later. I'll give you another month or two to go forward on.
Very good, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. If not, we're moving along good here. We'll go to the 915 item, and we're going to have a presentation on North Dakota CARES Task Force.
Is there a height difference between us, sir? Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm, for the record, Lieutenant Colonel Davina French, and today I am representing not only National Guard, but the ND CARES Committee. So on behalf of the First Lady, Betsy Dalrymple, who is the chair, she said it's sure she could be here, but actually in about 3 hours we have a big meeting that starts in Bismarck that she'll be hosting for the ND CARES, and we have some out-of-state visitors. So I gave you a presentation so we could kind of tell. We've actually had the opportunity to speak to you every time you have a meeting, so you've had the opportunity to grow with us as an organization. From the very beginning of ND, it was called SAMHSA back then, now ND CARES now. And so just to give you a little update, we have not necessarily changed our vision. It still is a coalition of dedicated to strengthening an accessible, seamless network of support. And for service members, veterans, families, and survivors. We still are the only state that includes our surviving family. And just to bring this into light of, they're all around us. Last night, those of you who were in the club probably met, and actually at the house, met Adrian Lindy. and Adrian Lindy, her husband, who's worked right here at the Regional Training Institute, and he was killed in December of 2013 over in Afghanistan. So we just always try to, they're around us, they're in our neighborhoods, they're our next door neighbors, so that's why we decided as a coalition for the state of North Dakota, based on that, that we have so many per capita, that we would represent them as well. One of the things that I want to make perfectly clear so everybody understands is that ND Cares is not a provider of services. But we're just a coalition of dedicated individuals that work throughout organizations, both private, nonprofit, and state and federal, that help to recognize and brand interest out there across the state that will help our heroes and their families. So on the third page, the goals, we have actually kind of narrowed the focus just a little bit to help us as a coalition of over 40, and we've gone with develop a leader network to support collaborative efforts. The second one is to integrate existing programs and resources to create an effective and efficient service system. And the third one is to conduct a comprehensive assessment of needs. And I think the third one, we've really narrowed down and made it a six-word sentence because that's also what you're trying to do, and this is why we're here, is because there are gaps out there that all of our organizations are having trouble finding, okay? So we're just outlining what our services that we do provide. We're out there, and I know Lonnie and his team is out there doing the Vietnam Veterans meetings on a monthly basis across the state, all 53 counties. So we're taking that information. The National Guard on both the Air and the Army side will do just to send it out, ask people, what service are you getting? What service do you need? And we're keeping the questions very, very simple so that we can branch across the different generations from Korea, pretty much Korea, all through the veterans that are serving today and service members. We do currently meet. We've upped our meeting time, so we meet once a month at least, now the big coalition. The executive team, which consists of First Lady as the chair, the co-chairs with Connie Spencer-Annick and the Second Lady, and then there's three team leads underneath that, a representative of the North Dakota Veterans Administration, the National Guard, and the Department of Human Services, and that's really the executive committee, and they're meeting nearly weekly right now. And so we have a very short-term goal we're going to get to that I'll tell you about, but that's really why we're up in this. Plus, you're asking us for information about every 3 weeks, so we're trying to at least do something in between the 3 weeks. So a multi-collaborative effort, it says 40-plus military and civilian professionals. The professionals, I'd like to say, the organizations, the North Dakota Governor's Office, Department of Human Services, where we really get a broad reach on the PTSD perspective in the civilian community. The Department of Health, and they bring to them not just the health piece, but the suicide prevention piece at the state level. The North Dakota National Guard, both Air and Army, and North Dakota Veterans Affairs, UND Center for Rural Health, and that really focuses on the TBI piece, the traumatic brain injury piece, is housed out of there through a grant. So they are not only working with regular civilians, but they also have a military piece to that is funded. And that's one of the hidden wounds out there we have for the veterans. And so just reaching out and figuring out who has TBI, who's been in blasts. For example, I deployed from 2003 to 2004 with Lonnie, actually. There was no way to rate how many times we got hit with an IED. And we were doing crazy things like, you're only as smart as you know, and so there's going to be a big explosion that we would detonate because we'd find and we'd tell everybody to get behind the cars and of course all good soldiers are, if they know there's going to be a big explosion, grabbing for their camera. So you'd do the countdown 3, 2, 1 and most good soldiers would streak, you know, and take a picture. TBIs, mild TBIs, that's how they occur. So now, starting in 2008, what they do is they do a baseline before we deploy, and then another test when we come home and ask you how many times were you in explosion. We don't really do the pictures behind the cars anymore because we know better, but really that's what we're looking at from the start of this to the end of this. We have the Federal Veterans Affairs, and of course that's the piece we're really trying to fit in with is the federal side, you know, and to work with the state, and everybody has the same records. And then give an example of a private entity out there, the Heart Springs, and I think many of you heard Heart Springs testify. They do healing for PTSD, TBI, many things like that, without the use of drugs. And I know the VA gets the bad rap for all that. All they do is give you drugs. And they actually are starting to funnel through some money through the VA, federal VA, into the Hot Springs arena as a test to see what kind of therapies can be used out there. You know, Marty talked about the dogs and the healing dogs, and they really are talking about how do you relax your mind, music therapy, out in the garden, physical therapies, you know, where you're riding horses, those kinds of things. So they're exploring those different kinds out there. They're actually a coalition member of ours. And we've been talking to the Homeless Coalition at the state level and at the local levels. We've been briefed by them because really, and I know it says you want a definition of homelessness. Currently, our focus is very broad. It's on veterans and service members. So we're picking up everybody and their families, and if you're homeless, you're homeless. And the Homeless Coalition, they come in and talk to you. They'd be like, those Vietnam veterans are out in the field out there, and they've got their bungalow all built, and they're ready for the winter, and you go out and you talk to them, and they're like, no, you know, we're okay. We don't really trust the government. That's not your fault or my fault, but we know they're out there, and they're being dealt with on a one-on-one basis. It's just continuing to do it and continuing to grow, and that's the hard part, is it's growing. Homelessness is growing with the veteran population in North Dakota. On the next page, the progress report. And we got a couple of pages of progress. Talked about continuing to expand our leader network. And that's really across the state. The First Lady has done a miraculous job of representing veterans and service members, families, and their survivors, and learning about these processes and people that we have out there. And so we set her up on a pretty much a weekly schedule, and she's at the Minot Air Force Base. She's meeting the leadership out there. She's got the Grand Forks Air Force Base. They're now in the coalition. We have the military reserves are now represented in it, the Department of Commerce, and the federal VA system, which tackles both the medical side and the services, the benefits side. So what we're really trying to do is again, we're just the coalition that assists. We're not the service provider, but we got to have a big enough cross-section of everybody. That's what we're really working towards. The initiated legislator veteran caucus development. And some of you may have heard about this so far, but we have Senator Dick Dever and Alan Fair on the committee, and they are representing actually you as a body and listening and helping us. And, of course, Dr. Fair is a doctor. I just called him doctor. He's a psychologist, and they're both veterans out there. And so we know that they put out the feeler to see who would like to be a member of the Veterans Caucus. And what it really is, I think, can enable everybody to do is to have an educational piece. Not everybody can be on the Government Services Committee, but everybody has to vote for something. So there's an educational piece that caucus can bring into helping to understand about just things like we're talking about today, the education and the, what are we doing to help our service members and families. We partnered. The First Lady and Second Lady went out and partnered with the Federal VA Administration to help with the data sharing. And if you know a little bit about HIPAA, and I can't talk about HIPAA, but I know it's, you're not supposed to tell private stuff about other people, okay? We have all of that kind of put up bridge or block rates for us. And what they're going to do is they're going to feed us information through the North Dakota Veterans Administration that at least helps us count how many veterans are out there. Okay, and get people registered. So if you take this 11-year period of this last war, and you take the first 4 years, which we had well over 50% of at least the National Guard's members that were deployed, that 50% did not have the opportunity to register with the federal VA. Okay, since then they have. They're at basically at the plains, and you need to sign up. So those are just some of the efforts that these different state and federal agencies can assist with. To get people registered, just so you can see if you do have benefits.
Senator Carlisle has a question.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. Carol, on this Veterans Caucus, you know, we've been working on, some of us are, we really like the idea. Are we going to, like, everybody gets so busy during the session, then we try to help when we'd hear about a veterans issue or, you know, get involved, especially on the floor on our side to try to do some things. Is there going to, who's going to be the coordinated effort? Is it going to be Lonnie, you, or are we going to have a little, so we know kind of what's going on, because he gets darn busy, so if I know there's an issue or there's something we got to do, you know what I mean, or get behind, or at least take a second? I mean, that's just my opinion, because it's a zoo, as you know, during the session, but yet, we did pretty well for veterans, we thought, last session, you know, we didn't win them all, but we got to start. But this coordinated effort, who's going to kind of head it up, for how that's going to work?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, behind the scenes look on that, and probably a really different answer is, of course, I'd like to say that the two senators are going to be the charging effect. What we're doing behind the scenes is things like the North Dakota Veterans Affairs, the ACOVA, the service organizations, the private side, the UND, Rural Health, the Human Services and Health Services. We're actually having combined meetings currently right now, so that there can be a veterans and service member that can speak with one voice, one message.
That's what I'm asking.
And then that way, that Lonnie knows what the guards do, and the guard knows what the COVA's fighting for, and you guys have, okay, here's the 22 initiatives. And this is what is important to a community and to a state instead of just onesies and twosies.
Okay.
So if that helps to answer the question.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. And the last thing on the page is to resolve the barriers to services that from an eligibility disconnect between the local and the VA. And this was, it was noticed in one of those meetings where we had 40 organizations around the table. And about 30, 45 days ago, the Human Services said they think it's ridiculous that they can't service veterans. And the VA went, what are you talking about? And he said, well, on the Human Services, the state side, if you come in, I'm a veteran, I come in and I say, I need some mental health, I'm having a little PTSD troubles, can you help me? And they say, of course we can help you. So they type your name in, and they get to the third screenshot, and it says, oh, you're a veteran? And I say, yeah, today I'm a veteran. And the screen comes up at that point, once they hit yes, this says, you now need to refer them to the federal VA. We cannot service you. That's exactly what was happening. And neither side knew it was happening, so they got them both in the same room, and currently right now the Department of Human Services is revamping their computer intake system and across the state. So when you talk about what does the coalition do, we're not a service provider, but we may be a pretty good identifier of issues out there. So if you talk to the VA, that's a very big win out there. On the next page, we have a few more on the progress. We began to shift the question from, are you a veteran, to have you ever served in the U.S. military? Many, many people who have come back from Iraq, Afghanistan, younger than I, do not really understand that they're veterans, because maybe we still serve in the military. And maybe it's their vision of the 25-year-old that sees the AMVETs out there that serves a dollar drink, and I don't belong there, so maybe I'm not a veteran. So we are changing our tone to just say, are you a service member? And that's statewide. The National Guard Veteran Outreach Team, which is five individuals, who's actually state-funded, we have actually five service areas across the state. We've taken those five service areas and we've morphed them to look exactly like the Department of Human Services, so that we have identical areas that we can talk about, which will help the team effort, not only with the outreach from our side, but from the Veterans Affairs side and from the North Dakota Veterans Affairs side through all the county VSOs. So we can start building information teams out there, outreach teams. And the Department of Human Services got a nice grant, a nice little grant, and they took the choice to open it up to the public for private service providers. And at their conference in May of 2014, they brought in behavioral health training specific to veterans and service members and their families. So that was a big step of kind of partnering with the state and federal entities. And then, sir, committee, on the next steps, my glasses here. Of course, we're going to continue to partner with organizations, and it's going to just keep growing. Every 30 days, it's just going to keep growing a couple. We're going to continue to provide information and issue identification on mental health in reference to the services provided for the veteran service members and families and survivors. There's a, when we first began this, we called it SAMHSA, and the Substance Abuse Mental Health Agency. And through them, we got the original grant to come up with some people and design the original strategic plan. So part of the SAMHSA, the federal piece of this, is that they funded another, about a month ago, another small team from North Dakota to go back to Baltimore and say, let's teach you how to help implement your strategic plan. So that team went out to Baltimore, and that's who's actually coming into town this week, is the professionals, the facilitators, to come to our state, meet with our team, and to help us figure out a lot of the problems we have is where we're so rural. So they're going to come back and assist us. That's on our plate. And we think that tentatively set for 26 September up in Minot, we'd like to do the rollout, the public rollout, the press releases, the general speaking, the big piece of ND care, so it starts to become synonymous with aiding and assisting the veterans and service members, families, and survivors. So that's kind of our real short-term goals there. Pending any questions, sir, committee?
Is there any questions for the committee? Representative Curran.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question under progress. When you mentioned you're shifting the question, are you a veteran? Just when I read that, have you ever served? That means past, and you indicated that this would be individuals that are still serving. Would you want to say, have you ever served or are serving in the military?
Mr. Chairman, sir, yes, I did, and yes, it is for the past as well.
But it doesn't indicate the existing. If you ask the question, have you ever served, that's still only people that have that are out of the military. That's just the way I read it. I don't know.
I'm going to take a note because I didn't think like that, so that's very, very good.
Well, I think...
Currently serving.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Yes, sir.
That was just the way I read it. You're still past and you're not... You have to be out of the military in order to gain the benefit. Just a question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, Representative, thank you. And we can add that. That's a simple add. It makes sense. So, yes, sir.
Is there any other question? Representative Steiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last time you spoke about the suicide rate, can you give us any more update on how are we doing on that level? I think you had some numbers for us the last time you spoke.
Mr. Chairman, ma'am, I don't currently have the additional numbers. I do know that in the military side, since the last time we came here, there has been, at the National Guard level, no reported suicides. I know that our coalition has met with the Grand Forks and the Minot Air Force Base because they are that federal piece of it that have not quite shared all the answers to us on a statewide basis, so we're trying to work with them. But currently, right now, I do not have any with me, but we can get some more.
Is there any other questions? Well, I just want to, you know, part of the reason for this committee was to look at benefits to veterans, obviously, and you mentioned gaps. We're also to look if there's overlap. You know, it gets a lot of bills. You're there all the time, too, knowing that. And trying to sort out, are we putting our money in the right places if we're... spending it right? Are the things we're spending it on that shouldn't be included any longer? Are we missing gaps? Because we all want to maximize our use of our dollars. But when you testified the first time about North Dakota Cares or the other name, that's where the light went off. You guys are doing a big piece in one area of what this committee. That's why you're being asked to report to us every time we meet, and I would request that you will be meeting, you know, the next couple times too, because to try to make this report, you know, and figure out some of this, because that's what we're trying to do. So when all these bills come rolling in, we have some type of template, you know, to put them off, so the dollars that do get allocated end up going in the right places for the most benefit for the most people. But I do appreciate the work you're doing, because this really is a big part of it, in an area that's pretty difficult for a committee like this to get into without some type of group helping us.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will pass it on to the First Lady. And just one little note, it's a stack about this big, and it represents every state all 54 states and territories out there, and it's in very draft form, and it's listing what state by state benefits are offered, both state and federal. And so it is in draft, and they're saying about 60 days from now, so which you'll hit to hear about the end, they'll have a by-state. Remember that bubble chart that we had at the very beginning of this identified what we did and didn't have for benefits in the state? It's going to be the current one, so we will bring that.
We're going to have a report from the Lonnie and stuff a little later on what he's working on. I don't know if that's the one you're relating to, but he's also working on
something. We're working in concert with that.
Yeah, so he's going to report later on a little bit of what he's been doing on that, which is very exciting. So we get a tool, because everybody wants to make informed decisions at the end of the day, like I said, to maximize their dollars.
Yes, sir. And thank you for your time.
So there's no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We are about 10 minutes ahead of schedule, so we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we will start again at 9:45 with the veterans on possible bills or legislation. Call the meeting back into order, and we're going to start on our 9:45 item and the presentation of representatives of the Administrative Committee on Veterans Affairs.
Mr. Chairman, committee, for the record, I'm Dean Overby, Chairman of the Administrative Committee on Veterans Affairs. In the following are legislative bills, the Administrative Committee on Veterans Affairs and the North Dakota Veterans Coordinating Council agreed upon for the next legislative session. At this point, we're proposing there will not be any new bills, but just requesting a budget for the Department of Veterans Affairs. The most important part of their budget will be the increase in the post-war trust fund. This bill is our top priority. We've attempted for two sessions to get $2 million added to the 4.1. In the last session, they added $250,000 to the principal, and we're thankful for that. That should bring we need to bring it up to maintain interest and take care of our veterans today. Funding for the veteran service organizations and national service officers and the power attorneys. Right now we have the American Legion, DAV, Disabled American Veterans, and the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Each organization is struggling right now financially, so we're asking for a grant to keep them in, keep a national service officer at the VA in Fargo. We just had one. We had a FTE added to our team last year, and AMVETS had a national service officer, and they could not afford it anymore, so they closed their office, so we acquired their officer. So we took over the AMVETS. We still keep their office at the VA, so it seems to be no change. And then we're asking for continued funding for the veterans education appropriation through the university system, and to maintain or increase the funding for the North Dakota Department of Veterans Affairs budget. PTS dogs as assessment needed is determined by the number of applications submitted. Veterans stand down last biennium, it was decreased by $10,000, and that's all been allotted right now. So we asked to increase that back to the $20,000 to make it through the biennium. Transportation fund, we're looking for, we'll need to replace one or two of the vans in the next biennium, and a lot of that money comes from the DAV that accept our share of it, so we get the vans at a good price. And we want to continue the outreach for the Ancient Orange projects that we have. We've been working with the Adjutant General's office and with the Guard. We're going to work together. We'll have a couple meetings so everybody comes in on one page and we'll come in with all the bills together so we don't have any extra, no surprises. So other than that, that's the only thing. We hope just to come in with our bill for our budget. So any questions?
On the veterans education training, you want added funding, do you have a number that you're going to be requesting? I know that you're looking to get to the 520, or whatever it was, or 500.
To 538. We're going to watch through this program to see how they manage it through this biennium, you know, if the 325 is going to make it, or if we have to go to the 538 back to what it was.
But that's the number you most likely, you're not looking for higher than that, then, probably just to get back to that number. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just get back to that number, yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Senator Carlisle.
Thank you. On the stand-down events, I speak Bismarck, ours has gotten a lot bigger. How many cities are doing those now that do you know of?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Carlisle, Minot, Grand Forks, Dickinson, Bismarck, I think it's four.
Williston starts one.
See.
And I remember seeing the 20, where do we look for that, or so you explain it to people what it is, you know, because it should be a fairly easy sell because of the number of people. What is that in your budget, or where is that going to be plugged in?
We want to put in our budget the 20,000. What happens, we allow $5,000 per stand down.
Okay.
And it's funded, they have to match, it's matching funding. So Bismarck we've been very fortunate with Bismarck. The AMVETS has taken that stand down on, and they haven't asked for money for years. The new ones that are coming in are needing to start up money to get going. They're not all used. The money's allocated, it's obligated to them, but they might not use it. You know, they got the money, they got to find the funding to match it. And if they don't need all the money, they won't use ours. So it's not necessary to be used, but it's obligated right now to go out if they do need it.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Pollard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This might be a few questions. So on bullet point two, you're talking $150,000, right?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Representative Pollard, yes.
Okay, can I continue, Mr. Chairman?
Yep, just continue.
Now the stand down events, if I remember some of the testimony we had in our section, some of those stand down events we were told were kind of being taken over by I won't say taken over, but we had some veterans tell us that other organizations were coming in and kind of attempting to take them over or something other, and you were kind of losing some, I won't say you guys were losing focus, but it was not pinpointing as well. Now, is that being taken care of? If you know what I mean, but we had heard that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pollard, the Department of Veterans Affairs does not do the stand on themselves.
Yeah.
It is the county service officer from that county, from Dunn County or Richardson or wherever, that does it. They do it, and the veterans organizations are usually the one that run the stand down. So they got to find the matching. They're the ones that find the matching funds. The county service officer and the veterans organizations put them together. They bring the Department of Veterans Affairs in. They bring the VA in. I believe some of the guard are components are in there, and we bring everybody together, give the guy a free haircut, shave, get him some clothing if he need it, and whatever else. So it is a big turnout.
Yeah. Well, the only reason why I'm bringing it up, Mr. Chairman, is some veterans had said they thought it needed to be refocused a little more, but then when you're taking money for matching grants from others, you kind of lose that too as well. And I understand that. That's just something we had heard. Did we buy 3 or 4 vans last session?
One.
No, we bought more than one.
We bought two the first year, and I believe one is ordered now for this.
Yeah, so there'll be three in the biennium? Okay. I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh! One more thing, Mr. Chairman. could we find out at some point, and maybe this is for the end of the thing here today, as far as how many dollars, we talk about $250,000 was put to the post-war trust fund. Could we find out if any money was put in previous bienniums? Because because I thought there was. But maybe I'm wrong about that, too, so I would need to be re-educated as far as that goes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pollard, the previous session, we put, we didn't put any money into the post-war trust fund.
Okay.
But you put $250,000 into the grants budget for Department of Veterans Affairs, that we spent that $250,000, that was our budget for the two, for that biennium.
Yep.
And then we didn't touch any of the post-war trust fund to let it grow.
Okay.
So it, you did go to 200, no, 210, 210.
We just replaced the earnings for that biennium and let the earnings stay to grow the principal.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Is there any other, go ahead, Representative Broward.
Mr. Chairman, Chairman Dean, how widespread are the repercussions from Agent Orange?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Broward, it's widespread throughout the state. If you talk to the Vietnam veterans, it's widespread, but they're too proud to come up and admit it. That's why we need this. With this outreach, we're reaching some more of them that are finally saying, yeah, they're seeing their grandkids, because it's affecting generations down. It's not just the veteran, it's three generations down. So they're starting to see their grandkids get affected by the St. George. So that's why it's coming to the table more.
Continue.
What percentage of the Vietnam vets are directly affected by Agent Orange?
No, that I can't answer. Lonnie, could you answer that? I don't think we have a number on that. So.
Is there any other questions? Any other comments from you? Otherwise, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
And we are back a little ahead of schedule, but we're going to go to the next item because it's a memorandum from the Legislative Council. Am I right there? Yeah. On income tax.
If I can have you turn your attention to the memorandum entitled Income Tax Exemptions for Veterans Retirement Compensation. This memorandum provides information regarding income tax exemptions in other states for veterans retirement compensation. As you can see, there's a schedule that lists the state, whether there is or is not a state-specific veterans income tax exemption for the veterans retirement pay, and the amount of the exemption. The exemptions vary state to state. Several of them, I think there's about 15 that have 100% exemptions. Including that first one, Alabama, you see there. Some have specific dollar amounts where it's up to a certain amount of the veterans retirement pay that's exempted. Some have different amounts for different ages. For example, Delaware, for persons under 60, they get up to a $2,000 exemption. But for persons age 60 and older, they get $12,500.
This is income exemptions, not tax. I mean, these amounts, like up to $2,500, it's up,
right.
The $2,500 of income.
Of income that's exempt from being taxed, yeah. Okay. Yep. Okay. Let's see. Kentucky actually has a specific state calculation where they use the years of service to determine the amount. In addition to North Dakota, it appears, or including North Dakota, under 10 don't have a state-specific veterans retirement tax exemption. So, if you have any questions,
Representative Lauzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Alex, specifically, I don't know if you can answer this, but New Hampshire, as I understand, does not have an income tax, but they tax dividends and investments. Okay. And so, I'm wondering, as we maybe one day get to the point of not having much of an income tax in North Dakota, and yet they're exempting 100% on dividends, is that how I read this? Because they don't have a tax on income?
I guess I wasn't specifically aware of that. I didn't see that in the information I looked at. But I guess if they're exempting all income, then they're also exempting veterans retirement pay. So, and I did list at the bottom, there were several states that had no income tax that were listed, so. We'll look into the New Hampshire question.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carlisle.
Thank you. It's kind of a three-parter for you as the chairman. Are you looking, relative to this, are we looking at perhaps something from the committee or a statement in a report or an individual lawmaker or a blend? What do you think?
It's really going to be the wish of the committee. I guess if the committee member wants to have a bill looked at to see if it would come out, that would be their choice. But it, I don't know.
Could, oh, I was going to say.
Are you done?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, can we get a comment from the general or Lonnie at some point then? What they think?
When, yeah, that's, let Representative Croon first, if he's got a question for Alex or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Alex, going through this, have we, have any idea, even though our income tax is pretty low in North Dakota, what kind of fiscal note this would be if we gave 100% or 50% or anything? Have you been able to analyze that?
We have not looked into that yet. Okay. We're, I guess, waiting for that to be requested, so.
Okay, thanks.
In general, did you want to comment on it? We've kind of moved into a discussion phase, so I would welcome your comments.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I certainly would be glad to answer any questions. Speaking as Dave Spencenatic and not the Adjutant General, because I'm not in a position at this point to, you know, to really advocate anything one
way
or the other.
We appreciate that and understand that.
All right, thank you. But what, you know, what I've heard in talking to, you know, others across the state, representatives of various organizations, is that, you know, there will be an initiative, you know, to try to exempt all military retirement from state income tax. And, you know, obviously that's a decision that will be made by the legislature and the governor, too, for that matter. Part of the argument is, you know, to try to entice people to, you know, retire in North Dakota. You really have, I'll say, two groups of retirees. You have those that retire from active duty and could, you know, depending on when they enlist, could retire, at least be eligible for a retirement pension at age 37 and a half or so. And then you have National Guard members who, you know, retire from the Guard at an earlier age, but their pension doesn't begin until age 60. Part of the argument that I've heard is that, you know, we have a number of people at the two Air Force bases and others that, you know, are from North Dakota that, you know, are in the military elsewhere that, you know, could retire in North Dakota. And a common question that's asked is, you know, what are the benefits of retiring in North Dakota? And income tax, even though our income tax is quite low, is always a question. So you have that group of younger people that, you know, it'd be nice to think that if we can encourage them, convince them to retire in North Dakota, even though they may be retired at age 38, they're still going to be part of the workforce. And then, of course, those beyond age 60 that, as I said, are the, those are the reserve component members, National Guard, Army Reserve, Marine Corps Reserve, Naval, Air Force Reserve. And as I said earlier, you know, I know there are, in fact, groups that are, you know, trying and working towards, you know, having a bill introduced that would consider exempting all military retirement pay from the state income tax. I'm glad to try to answer any questions you might have.
Is there any question? Representative Robert.
Mr. Chairman, General, all military retirements are federally taxed.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brahman, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Croon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. General Spitzenatic, visiting with these individuals and the information you're getting, what numbers do you think would that enhance to keep and or add to the population in North Dakota? I mean, it's if you retired people actually spend quite a bit of money, and if you get them to retire in the state, the offsetting sales taxes and all the other things possibly could offset that. I don't know if these individuals that you've spoken to have any indication of that, but those are, I'm assuming those are some of the thoughts that they're having when they're talking about that, and I'm wondering if they have any general idea if more people would retire in North Dakota if that were the case.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croon, I honestly don't know what the numbers might be. I think in some instances it's sort of a matter of principle. As I said, you know, North Dakota's income tax is quite low. But, you know, in a person's mind, if a benefit for their service to the country and state is that, you know, their retirement is exempt from income tax, I mean, that in itself is significant. The number, the dollar amount may not be that great, and I don't know what the number of individuals would be. You know, it may not be that great either, but it's, you know, it's principle more than anything.
Senator Carlisle.
Thank you. This kind of a strategy, I know you can't lobby now, but if asked the right questions with the governor's office before his speech, you know, during the organizational session, he could couch it as an initiative or, I mean, any number of things which triggers any lawmaker, you know what I mean, has time to do it. I mean, there's ways to do it, but it certainly doesn't hurt if you get buy-in in that speech, you know, how his statements, you know, a blend of something like that, unless we, you know, do something beforehand and he's aware of it and, you know, puts it in. But there's ways to do it, because I didn't realize, I mean, it doesn't make us look real good on here compared to all the other states. Wow, you know what I mean? So some blend, I don't know if we could go the whole thing, but that would be one of the arguments, getting people to stay in North Dakota, so. Okay.
Is there any other questions? Go ahead, Representative.
Mr. Chairman, General, percentage of our per capita, North Dakota, as far as active military, has got to rank near the top. Active military per capita, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brodman, yes, that is correct. Matter of fact, when we talk about the National Guard, North Dakota leads the nation. It's, you know, number one amongst the 50 states in terms of the number of Guard members serving and, of course, having served on a per capita basis.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments by the committee? We still have 5 minutes, so we can do a little more. Otherwise, is there a desire by the committee that we have a bill drafted up? Because if we're going to draft one, I would like it to be for 100%. Our income taxes are so low in this state, it'd be very foolish to mess with a part of one. But we don't have any obligation to as a committee, because the bills are going to show up anyway. But otherwise, we could ask for the next meeting to have a drill drafted, and then we'd have a fiscal note to actually look at to see what the ramifications are.
Mr. Chairman, being you can't make motions, would you like a motion so we get a second and talk about it?
I look for the guidance of the committee if somebody wants
to
make a motion so they can do that. Second. It's been moved and second. Is there any further discussion? Representative Kroon.
And I want to thank the general for the comment. I think just the attitude means more than the money. That's very specific, I think. So I think we would enter in with this group at 100% would be very wise.
Mr. Chairman, I think, too, the general said about the per capita guard, I think our per capita veterans in the states were one of the top states, too, I think. So we probably have a little something to go on, too.
Representative Mooney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my question would be, the veteran definition that we were speaking about earlier, is that going to end up applying here as well, then? The issue that was brought up earlier?
That definition, unless we made a specific exclusion, would fall into place, then.
We need to change that.
Yep, exactly.
You want to, yeah, please address it.
Mr. Chairman, Members of the committee, just a comment. We were talking earlier, you know, as the committee was discussing the definition of veterans. One of the things we need to do, and we're going to begin to work on it, is have a single definition of veteran for purposes of the state of North Dakota. You know, as you heard, there are three or four definitions of veteran in the Century Code, depending on what program, what activity, what you're considering, what you're looking at. So, you know, I think it's time, you know, for us to have a definition of a North Dakota veteran, and you know, we'll begin to draft something and talk to Lonnie and, you know, work with them and others, and we certainly would be willing to bring it to the committee for, you know, its next meeting.
Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest, and Legislative Council always does this better than I can do it, but it's not a question of veteran or not, it's whether or not you get retirement income that's related to the military. And if the legislation is drafted in that form, you can circumvent this entire issue.
I think that was where some of our questions were. We just need to recognize that we need to put that define in the legislation of what we intend, because there is obviously the different definitions.
Absolutely.
And I think the intent is certain bills to go to different groups, depending on the level of service. But you're correct, we can add that to any legislation to define which group we want to include.
But Mr. Chairman, yes, that's true. But here, if the income that can be documented as coming from due to military relationship of any type,
Right. That's
all that's critical for tax purposes. And then you don't get trapped in the definition. It's where the source of the income.
Well, we have that motion and second. I guess that wasn't defined specifically in the motion, but I think there's an understanding that's what we'd be looking for as a committee so that they can draft that in. So if there is no further discussion, I'm just going to ask, we're all in favor. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No opposition. We won't do a polling of the committee, and we'll have that to look at and decide if we want to go forward, and then we'll actually have a fiscal note, see what ramifications of. Okay, thank you. The next item, we're about 5 minutes ahead, is 10:20, and I'm going to ask Lonnie to come forward regarding its information that he's collecting, and it was alluded to a little earlier regarding state benefits. He showed me this a couple weeks ago, and I said, you got to report to the committee on this. And this is going to be a great tool once it's completed. It's, I think, going to be a great, my understanding, it'll be available to everybody to access through the veteran site or the information once you get it up and running. So I'm going to let Lonnie go from there, but this could be a really good tool for all the legislators and everybody as we go forward, and especially into the session. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, the recommendee is Lonnie Wine, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, North Dakota. And just to follow up on your discussion you had just a little bit ago about the income tax exemption, House Bill 1254, you can reference that, was last session, and the fiscal note on that was $4 million. And since I'm not being very clear in my mind whether it was this session or the session before, they did have, like, retired firemen and different things on one of those bills. So I tried to look that up, and I couldn't find which one it was, but that was a $4 million note on that one. Okay, moving forward on this, this is a spreadsheet, and I hope you can kind of see it. If you're not familiar, might not be able to read the details here, but as the incoming president of the National Association of State Directors, I've directed each state to fill out the spreadsheet for me. And we're going to share it on our website, our national state website, and hopefully we'll have it in a very nice way on our website so it's easy to navigate. But by state here, and I will try to move this up, so here's North Dakota, and I'll leave that there. And what we've done is just taken down a lot of the information and questions and benefits and different things that we email each other quite a bit on. Do you have this? How does it work in your state? We're constantly sending these emails out. And so I broke this down. We did one earlier, and that's the first part here that's already answered, and then I've added a lot onto that. And so the column there, war bonuses, is what we have, the adjusted compensation, and each state will list exactly whether or not they have it, and then a little idea of what they have here. This is a summary page. Do they have nursing home cares or vets homes? The number of them they have are state veteran cemeteries, the number of those they have, property tax exempt, yes or no. Home loan program, and quite a few years back, the federal government offered this program or a grant of, I think it was $5 or $10 million to start a home loan program for veterans in the state, and I think 5 to 7 states actually took it up. And they're doing quite well with those. I know Oregon and Wisconsin, Texas have this program, but they actually have the money they borrow out. The VA has those home loan guarantees, but there's no money with it. So they let the banks have the origination fee, but then they got all the interest off these loans. So they're pretty self-sufficient, they made a lot of money off those. So that's what the home loans are about. Free or reduced education fees for veterans, reduced education fees for veterans' families, personal loans and grants, the reduced fees for hunting and licensing for fishing. State approving agencies under the State Director, Department of Veterans Affairs, State Homeless Program, if they have one that's under the state, Veterans Affairs themselves, employment, such as Veterans Preference, the state mill tax exemption for retirement pay, or I'm sorry, state tax exemption for military retirement pay, state paid war bonus, veterans license plates, the V indicator on a driver's license, which North Dakota has, we started it, and we're just about half the states have it now. Veterans court, veterans licensing, and that's like the CDLs and different things that you get that experience in your license in the military, but when you get back into the civilian world, it's a different license. In North Dakota, we do have with the CDL. Let's see, where was I at? Spousal portable licensing. So if you move from airbase to airbase here in North Dakota, your spouse has to come with you, and they're a professional of some sort, where they need a license, and this bill we had passed last session. Spouse unemployment, North Dakota doesn't have that, so if your spouse has to move here because of a change in station for their spouse that serves in the military, that spouse won't get unemployment because they lost their job for moving here. Child interstate impact, or compact, and transportation for veterans. Those are the different areas that we have. That's the summary page. And we also have an organizational chart that they'll each be filling out so we have a better understanding how each state Veterans Affairs works. And so when we get into this, the states will fill in their information here, and they can get a little bit wordy for us, so we can check the total numbers on the summary page, and then we can go into each state and see exactly how their programs work. Like here I've got my definition or my explanation of, so if I can go down a little bit, here for our policies, and I write it out here, number of state cemeteries, the name North Dakota Veterans Cemetery, and then I have a link to our website so they can learn a little bit more as we share this with the other states. And then the burials we have, so they have an idea. These are some of the statistical information we ask each other quite a bit. Property tax exemptions here. Like on North Dakota here, I've got it written out pretty clearly, and then it should go right into our website on the side there, and I've got this blown up kind of big so you can see a little bit. Then the home loan programs, and each state fills out their information here like California did here. Veterans education, their status, veteran gets resident tuition rate, yes or no, and then the benefit amounts there, and hopefully the information on the side here. So I've got quite a bit of the information in on the first few there, and I can go back to the summary page.
And Representative Lauzer has a question for you, Lonnie.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lonnie, maybe I could wait to the end, but in a different capacity, I serve as a national chairman of something, and we give directives, and people nod their head and then don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how successful you're going to be, because this, to me, is a fascinating tool. I would absolutely love to use this during session.
I brought this up in about January, and most states have legislation every year, or I'm not saying most states have legislation every year, and some had legislation going on. And so that's the reason I haven't gotten that many in. I think I got about 16 of the 50 states already completed. I send out a reminder every few weeks, and then I get about four or five more. But everyone's committed to get it done because they all want to use the tool. We have our little website where we have what we call our filing cabinet, so when we do a survey with each other, we throw it in there so you can kind of go find your answers. But this is going to be a nice summation that we can have on our national website, and hopefully I'll have it on our state, so that's going to be real simple to answer the questions that you might have or each state might have. So yeah, we will get it done if I have to have people call the state. So,
Representative Brandon.
Mr. Chairman, Lonnie, can we get copies of those spreadsheets before we leave today?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Renneberg, you can have a copy if Alex can email it to you. He's got
okay.
I have no physical copy of it.
Okay.
It was too cumbersome to put on paper.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If you get it next week, is that okay? I don't have access
that's
to my
fine.
Email right now.
That's okay. Thank you.
And I'll be more than happy to share the completed one. I'm really hoping we have it done before your last meeting during the interim.
Yeah, I'm hoping too. Like I said, it's pretty exciting. I think it's going to be a great tool for everybody. So. But go ahead and continue.
Well, that was basically it. The summary page lists out all the different areas here. And as we go on, if we find a new one where we're going to do a survey or something, we can add another page under the end, like these, where you can fill in all your information, get the details. But then on the summary page, then we'll just have add that other column. And whether or not we end up putting this into Access or something that's a little bit easier to navigate, or leave it in an Excel form, we'll see how our IT people work with that. So as far as any other information that would like to be added to it, we're always open to that.
I would guess when some states send you their stuff you didn't think of that isn't there, that they're providing you benefits. I mean, they're not just responding to what's there now. They have something additional. Are they letting you know that too? So,
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. They're filling this out, and they're making those suggestions. And before I sent it out, I had the list of different things, and I got quite a few responses to add on to that. So hopefully we've kind of encompassed a lot of what we've emailed each other in questions in the last couple of years. So.
Okay, good. Is there any questions for Lonnie? Well, like I said, I think it's going to be a good tool once you get it completed, and it hopefully by our last meeting, but if not, hopefully you've got it completed with most everybody, if not everybody, by the time the session rolls around. So it'll be a good tool then.
We have a conference in September, and I'll have them all there and stuck in a room to finish if they haven't. So.
Sounds good. Thanks, Lonnie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we're down to our 10:30 item, and it's comments by interested persons. Well, we already made the general get up as an interested person, but I don't know if we have anyone else. There's no one else in the room. But so we'll just go into committee discussion and staff directives. Is there any comments on what we've heard today or any more of the veterans issues? We were trying to isolate this one to that pretty much, but we have enough time so we can discuss any items in front of the committee. Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I don't know if we have the authority. I know legislative committees can subpoena. I don't think we need to go to that level, but I think it would be very appropriate for this committee to receive a report on the North Dakota VA hospital system. I'm not as concerned about what's happening in the rest of the country, but I've had some constituents ask me how we scored in the reports that have come out, what do I know, and I have to confess general ignorance on that issue. And I know it's a federal program, but the people they serve are our constituents. And so I think we can say Congress or the president or whoever, you're responsible, but I think we should take responsibility of this and go at this aggressively to make sure.
Are you looking for the information that's been in the news, like wait times, things like that?
Specific to North, just to our system, and if they want to compare it with others, what other problems are there? You know, if there's a bill introduced in Congress to hire 900 additional positions and a huge appropriation bill, what's the staff needs in North Dakota from their perspective? You know, do we need to expand accessibility through the other alternative medical centers in our state? What's happening out there, and what do we need to do to make it right if it's not currently?
Well, our guidelines for this committee were to study benefits available to veterans, both state and federal. So it definitely fits within our guidelines. We were given a pretty loose open window on doing that. So I guess I'd have no problem if the legislative council wants to see what they can get. It might be amazing, and they'll be calling them on other levels if they can actually get much of the time frame that we have. But it doesn't hurt to inquire.
Mr. Chairman, Lonnie can give you a little snapshot on VA in Fargo.
If you want to, you're sure welcome to. Just a minute, Senator O'Connell.
Mr. Chairman, along with Representative Kaiser, in the last 2 weeks I've had 6 phone calls on this, and I've referred them to Senator Holden's office mostly. And on the same deals of my areas, you have to go to Fargo. Fargo says go back to Minot, Minot says go back to Fargo. So I've had six calls in the last 2 weeks on can't get in, can't get appointments.
Well, then it's definitely appropriate for us to see if we can get any information, because like I said, we were asked to look at federal benefits also. Go ahead, Lonnie.
Mr. Chairman, again, for the record, my name is Lonnie Wong, Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, and I've worked with Secretary Simsecki and his staff and the VA, and was up there the week that he resigned to go over the plan. There are 42 VAs that were actually identified that had this. We have 154 VA medical centers and over 800 community-based centers, so that includes all 950 some of those centers. North Dakota wasn't identified as one that has any problems. They did get an investigation conducted here. The initial report that I got is all clear, all good, but they're going to find probably a little bit of something here and there, or have at least a report of what they found, and I can get that report for the committee, and I can also request or give you the information for the director of the VA medical center, and I'm sure she'd be more than happy to come out and report that. And as far as the health care, I've been working for years to get our vans to go down to Fort Meade so that our western part of the state can get down there, and this new director, she's outstanding. She's already approved it. It's going to be at her cost, and normally the VA that you go to has to pay for that. But we're holding off on putting another van out in Williston that could go right down the state, because they're really close on having a solution for those veterans in the western part of the state to not have to go to the VA, so that it will be fee-based. There's different programs in the federal VA that they're now allowing more leniency on, so that they can actually, if the services are available in the public sector, they can use that. It's not announced where they're at yet, but I'm waiting for their announcement on that before we take another one of our vans and put out in Williston for that Fort Meade run, and because that might just answer it. So I think by the time you have your next meeting, we should have a lot of good answers for you, if you'd like.
Representative Curlin. No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I've had two contacts, one direct and one indirect, but both of them have been very positive of Fargo from Grand Forks, extremely positive. They said the people there are great to work with. They care. They act as they should. And the appointment times are good, so you know, there might be some conflicts, but both the two contacts I've had have been very positive about the VA in Fargo.
Senator Carlisle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How about Fort Meade? I've been down there on a tour, you know, mm-hmm. It's in Sturgis, for those of you, that's the one you're talking about. Did they make the cut too, is okay for treatment?
Senator Servig and Senator Carlisle, yeah. Actually, that was going to be the problem, is getting them to take a van for us. They said, we'll take the people, no problem, but they didn't have it in the budget to take another van in, and then the Fargo VA said, well, we'll just pay for it, which means they'll cover the gas and everything. They're more than happy to take the people in Fort Meade, and the veterans down there have been traveling, some have been traveling down there, and they enjoy it. It's a good facility, so it should be a really good working relationship, and it's in the same vision, which is like the same district, so.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And to your comment, Representative Cruen, thanks. That is one of the best VAs. And when I get to meet with up in the Secretary's office and with all the other state directors, they know that North Dakota is one of the best, because it's reported by Petzl. And I get to listen to the other states with their problems. And I always say, it's just we've got those North Dakota and Minnesota people working there. So I can't go wrong.
Representative Mooney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lonnie, I'm curious, in my area too, I have not heard any bad reports whatsoever, and I've asked my county VSO if she has heard of anything, and she has not. But I'm curious, is it possible then to find out from the other VSOs across North Dakota if they've had any feedback or reports or questions from some of the people that they serve?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yeah, probably I could check with a patient advocate up the VA. He would probably have the good notes on there. The biggest complaint I had is with the C-Box not having a mental health professional, and that had to do with just people had to apply. And so they were getting it very difficult in some of these new highly populated and expensive places in our state to live at the C-Box to have a doctor or someone with a doctorate that would want to work there. So they've got the one in Bismarckville, and I know that's been very effective. So.
Okay, Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman and Lonnie, I appreciate the report, but that's not what I'm looking for.
Okay.
Those are generalities. I want the specifics.
Right.
What's our average wait time? What are the, of all the questions asked, let's get a profile, because if it is good news, we should hear it. If it's bad news, we should hear it. And, you know, it's just to say we have a great one, we need to see it in mm-hmm. detail so that we can answer questions, because you can't be everywhere. And we do have a lot of contact with our constituents, and we have to have the information.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I believe that report is done. If it's not, we're due to get it this week, which is ending today. And I can just email that out to everybody, if that would be okay, so you have it as soon as possible.
I would like the VA people to be here.
I can do
at
that.
At a meeting.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, I think you've heard the comments and concerns, both Legislative Council and Lonnie, of what we're kind of looking for the next meeting. So I guess we'd request a report on this so we can have that information for our constituents that ask us questions. And as Representative Kaiser said, as detailed as you can possibly comply or get information on. Okay. Any other concerns or issues that the committee wants to discuss? We still got a few minutes. If not, we're going to have that one veterans bill. I don't really see any other veterans bills that I've seen thinking of drafting at this time. I think there's a lot of little details, but they're going to show up in the session anyways, individual bills. I don't think that's maybe necessary here. Senator O'Connell?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. In my area, you take Lansford, Mulhall, the surrounding areas of my Air Force base, so many of them, and I have a number of neighbors, have retired from the military around that 40 years, and being they're cutting back on the federal level, have gone back in and taken their job at pretty dang good wages back in it. So just the comments when the bill draft is being, you know, put together on how some of, you know, it's affecting them, because my next door neighbor with this in a half mile of me, yeah, was the leader in his squadron come out, and now he's running that squadron as a civilian. So last time I checked with my Air Force base, there was 976 civilian employees there. So just a little information.
Okay. Thank you. Alan?
Just for your information, Lonnie had mentioned that there was a bill in the last couple of sessions. At last session, there was a bill to exempt retiree military pay. It was House Bill 1254, and the fiscal note was just slightly over $4 million. And the bill was defeated in the House. It was introduced in the House and defeated in the House. There has been a bill in the last couple of sessions.
Yeah. No, I knew there had been some. I didn't know the details, but I think we'll look at a draft of one anyway, and we can decide where we want to go forward or not go forward from there.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question for next meeting, just visiting with Representative Pollard. Now, our MRCC report comes to this committee?
It comes to this committee, and it will be the next meeting.
Okay, and then, Representative Pollard, what do you have on the budget section? You said you... Because that's 20...
Mr. Chairman, if I'm correct, we have that coming in our June 25 budget section meeting.
Yeah. I know. It's
there's two parts to the report.
Okay.
The first part, we have to report to the budget section first with the options that were result of the study, and then the report to your committee at the next meeting. The Department of Corrections is supposed to report on what they're recommending to move forward with. So the budget section is going to get the options, and then your committee will get the department's recommendation. I'm not sure they may even give that to the budget section. I'm not sure what the plans are. That's what the section provided for.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Alan, correct me if I'm wrong. That's only dealing with if the MRCC should be relocated to the Youth Correctional Center.
Sure, that's correct. Yeah, it's looking at options for relocating it, and then if there's a recommendation to go with it.
Yeah, so Mr. Chairman, if we want to move it to Jamestown, then that's okay with Representative Carlisle, or Senator Carlisle, I'm sure.
It's an idea.
That's a debate right away. In the only other bills, because we're going to have to, I've asked, they're going to be drafted, and they don't necessarily have to go forward by the committee, but I'm asking them to draft a bill recommending a master plan to be redone for the Bismarck area. We haven't updated one for 15 years or whatever, because I think it's pretty obvious from the discussion, it's way beyond this committee to make any type of realistic recommendations and beyond. And there will be a fiscal note, but we can discuss that, but I've asked them to draft it, and if the committee, it'll be at our next meeting, whether we want to go forward, and also asking them to draft one about James River and the Jamestown Hospital, because I think if we're serious to go forward, we really need some type of guideline and plan that there's, the experts help comply, or compile, and our people are part of, so then when it gets into the legislative process, we can balance it against that. But I think that's the only two bills I've discussed with you.
Those are the only two that we've...
Yeah, you know, I said I'd like, but I said I didn't want to bring them to this meeting. We'll bring them when we're back in Bismarck, because that's where there'll be individuals that might want to address or discuss it, so, because we really need to get them in front of us next, the next meeting, if we're going to do anything, because at most we'll have two, well, I presume we'll have two more, but that's the only ones I see. The rest, everything else, we'll be reporting on what we're finding, but I don't see anything necessary for the committee at this point, unless something comes up the next meeting to back any bills to go forward. But is there any other issues or concerns of what we've been doing in the last few meetings that any committee members would like to discuss or bring forward? If not, then we have an 11:30 item, which is quite a ways off. We moved too fast here, but... which is a presentation by representatives of the Joint Executive Council, North Dakota National Guard. That is your people, are you doing that, or are you ready to go forward early on the schedule?
We are always ready to go forward.
We will go on to that then. You never go back.
Did you expect any other?
No. Just one more comment while we're passing this out, too. You know, the North Dakota Cares, and there's a lot of behavioral health issues and issues going on with the veterans there, and there is another committee looking at a lot of this. And they're going to report to us on some point, that committee, on what they found. But I kind of chose early on, I think Representative Mooney sits on that, Representative Whelan, that there would make no sense to have two committees duplicating themselves, and it fits more under the issue, you know, that they're doing than we are. So at the end of the day, we're probably going to just end up with a report on some of those issues, or more detailed, but not take anything up as this committee. At least that's my intent. Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, the committee, that makes sense. The and again, I don't sit on that committee. We get a lot of input about that committee on the health committee.
Yeah.
But the only reservation I have is whether or not, and perhaps the committee members can address that, is whether post-traumatic stress disorder, that's a very specialized category, almost universally related to military, although there are other exceptions, a bank robbery, a gunpoint, etc. But, you know, the mental health clinics, a lot of the work that's going on, especially in the West, is the more traditional mental health, drugs, alcohol, mental disease, outside of post-traumatic stress disorder. So I just want to make sure that, although they're looking at it, that is a significant component to address the needs of the military personnel.
And I think those concerns definitely need to be raised. The attempt was not to duplicate everything they were doing back in this committee.
And I understand that. I just want confirmation from the committee members that is happening, I guess. Or then this committee should participate.
And that question really can be addressed, because either their chair or representative of that committee will make a report to my intention is, I don't know if I've ever told you that, but they will be making a report to our committee, and at least that's what I was hoping to happen at some point.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Kaiser, what you're saying, George, is absolutely right. PTSD has been marginally talked about, but not nearly to the extent that we talk about it here in this committee. So it's really interesting, the overlaps. I know that North Dakota Cares has been a part of some of our discussions, and it's next Thursday that we'll be receiving our full report from the study person. So it will be interesting to see by the time we meet again then just how much of an overlap there was. But I think that you're right, that the PTSD issues as it's related to our military personnel, we really do have to continue to focus on, I think, in this committee or going forward into the legislative
committee. Well, North Dakota Cares has been one of the conduits to keep us in the loop, too, because the same, and Connie's here, but the same people have been going to all the committees and keeping, you know, that in the loop. It's just...
Yep, and they've done a wonderful job.
And that discussion was brought forward, but to... But it was, I kind of chose not to go into too much depth into this committee, more than just getting reports what they're doing, because... So we're not stumbling all over each other on it. Because it is an important issue to keep it focused in the right way.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we're done talking now, so you got the floor, General.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you're ahead of schedule. That's always great. But I've been informed that another interested party entered the room in the last few minutes. I have a 10:45 item on the agenda, and she was wondering if she could address the committee.
Let's take a break.
Yes, she may address the committee, so Connie, come on forward.
Thanks. If I hit the button, is there a trap door? I won't take much of your time.
You only have 45 minutes, so.
Enough time to rescue me. Connie Strinzanatic, used to be the municipal mom of North Dakota. Then I retired and somehow got pulled back into service for at least a short period of time. I'm working with the university system on their 5-year strategic plan. And as a part of that, I have been all over the state interviewing people on campus, the business community. I just finished a fascinating discussion with half a dozen business owners in the Devil's Lake area. Senator Elke helped me set it up, and it was a great conversation about not just about the Lake Region campus, but about higher education in general. The piece that you were just talking about, the mental health services and PTSD and substance abuse, self-medicating, some people like to say. It's interesting, as I've been going to all the campuses, when I got to the northwest corner of the state, boy, did I hear a lot about the need for mental health services. And we weren't just talking of the veteran population, we were talking in general. That seems to be, so now I'm kind of wearing North Dakota Cares and higher ed hat, because of course that's not within the purview of higher education except to train the professionals to work in the field. But I will just tell you that I'm hearing lots and lots and lots about the needs for both children and for adults. So I'm sure that you're going to be dealing with those issues in the legislative session. I just thought you might also be interested that to know that as a part of this 5-year look forward for higher education, everybody, of course, is talking about the roughly 26,000 jobs that we have open in North Dakota, the majority of which actually would exist in the Valley. Surprising to me that the majority are in the Valley. But as the campuses and the business community are talking about how we pull people into this state to help fill that workforce need, because it still takes us 9 months to grow a baby and then 18 years to get them ready for college. And so we don't have time. We're not going to fill those jobs if we move at a glacial pace. And so there's been a lot of conversation, and I just had it 15 minutes ago in Devil's Lake, the idea that if we have 250,000 people retiring from the military, there ought to be things that we can do in this state to set ourselves up so that we are an extremely attractive state for people coming out of the military. I just thought you might be interested that that there's a lot of talk about that rumbling around the state. And I don't know that anybody's figured it out yet, except to say that would have to be a multifaceted solution. But so higher education, of course, would have a piece of that. Do we have institutions that are leaning forward on the question of prior learning credit? Is there an issue that the legislature wants to look at? Because if you grant a student prior learning credit, those are credits you're not going to, your institution is not going to be reimbursed for. Is that an issue? All kinds of interesting questions, but I think by the time the gavel cracks on the next legislative session, we'll have some things sorted out. If you have any questions about ND Cares, I'd be happy to answer them, but I suspect you've already had a briefing on that. We continue to work hard to move forward in that arena also.
We had a good briefing by Colonel French on
great.
That. So, but on the other issues, I don't see things this committee, but it is a real relevant issue, how, because we need an immediate workforce. And you talk of the Valley, it's real. I mean, that's all that's being talked about. We have thousands of jobs we cannot fill. And that's an interesting concept to entice the veteran population. Is there things that go forward?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Because you're right, we don't have 18 years. We need to, in the next few
right.
years, because
right.
it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to grow if we can't provide a workforce.
Yeah, Dick Johnson, who's the mayor of Devil's Lake and a lifelong resident, he was just commenting that there are a number of large businesses that would love to locate in Devil's Lake. The issue is workforce. So we know that you've all heard the same story that I've heard. We have a vast need for the two-year programs. You know, for certificate and associate programs. But it's interesting, at the little business roundtable that Senator Wardner helped me organize in Dickinson, one of the individuals said, well, don't forget about the baccalaureate. We also have a crying need for baccalaureate degree people in different sectors of our economy. And so it's an interesting time, isn't it? North Dakota has never been at this particular crossroads. And so I just like to thank you for being visionary leaders as we look at how we take advantage of this unique opportunity in our state. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, for the third time, we will start the presentation.
Right. The button's on. Again, I'm Dave Spence-Mack, the Adjutant General for the State of North Dakota. And your next item on the agenda talks to our Joint Executive Council, and what I thought I would do this morning is give you an overview of the Joint Executive Council, talk a little bit about the strategic direction we are taking, and also talk about some of the challenges and issues that we face as a National Guard here in the state of North Dakota. I provided to you two handouts. The first is a draft. This is something that we want to get out to all of our soldiers. The one you have is a copy of the size that we'll give to all of our soldiers under the age of 30, and we'll have one with larger font for our soldiers that are more than 30, greater than 30. So, but what it is, you know, this is the strategic plan of the North Dakota National Guard. The Joint Executive Council, which is pictured on the back side, is made up of, I think it's 13 senior leaders of the North Dakota National Guard. Myself, the other general officers, also our senior enlisted leaders and chief warrant officer, and that, you know, these are representatives of both the Army and the Air National Guard. The purpose of our Joint Executive Council, you know, is to provide that strategic direction, that strategic leadership to our 4,400 soldiers and airmen and their families that make up the North Dakota National Guard family. What we do is we address those policies, those issues, those things that we need to do to ensure the success of our soldiers and airmen. And we meet at least quarterly. We had, you know, our most recent meeting was yesterday, and we addressed you know, the topics that are challenges for us, literally at all levels of our organization, and the fact is that you know, these are the people that, you know, are literally responsible for, you know, all of our members of the Guard, and they're responsible for us being able to prepare them for war, to prepare them for whatever natural disaster we may be called upon to, you know, protect the lives and the property of the people of North Dakota. So, you know, on the backside you see, you know, the membership of the Joint Executive Council, other contact information for various programs and support offices that are available to our soldiers and airmen, and then of course the map of the state of North Dakota showing, you know, where we have facilities. We have actually have facilities right now in 21 communities, armories primarily, and also it talks to some of the further support, family support activities that are available in each location. The front side is the one that talks specifically to the strategic plan, and the other little handout is something that, you know, we're going to get in the hands of every soldier and airman. We hope, we expect that they'll, you know, be familiar with what our direction is for the next 3 to 5 years, and quite frankly that they'll carry this with them. On the one side we have our vision and our mission, and our vision and mission has been the same for the last at least 8 to 9 years or so. Quite frankly, our mission, the reason why we exist, you know, is to provide those ready units, individuals and equipment, supporting our communities, our state and our nation. That's why you have a National Guard. And our vision is that, you know, we strive to become a dynamic, relevant force where everyone is a trained, mentored and empowered leader. And that's one of the things that we stress to our soldiers and airmen, that everyone is a leader. Some obviously have more responsibility than others, but the fact is that we must be leaders in terms of working with the people around us, our fellow soldiers and airmen, providing that leadership for our families, helping to see the future. And that's, you know, that's what we want to continue to strive for, is that trained, mentored, and empowered individual that is a member of the North Dakota National Guard. Our values are also, you know, printed on the card and on the little foldout. Our values, you know, leadership, excellence, trust, integrity, respect, selfless service. Those are the things that we strive to help our membership, our service members, families as well, to understand and be and you know, to build a strong force within the North Dakota National Guard. On the opposite side of the little card, and you know, on that what we call a Z card, are five broad goals. And if you look at those goals, and I'll talk briefly to each one. You know, number one is a trained, or to have trained and ready units and leaders. And really that is what I talked about earlier, the readiness of our units, of our individuals, the readiness of our families too, to be able to support the president as our commander-in-chief in a federal mission, or to support the governor as our commander-in-chief in a state mission. And, you know, we want to continue to strive to ensure that, when called upon, no matter what the mission, wherever the mission may be, you know, we're trained and ready, and we will succeed and succeed safely. Secondly, the second goal is to build a competitive force position for emerging missions. And this is something that became very important in just the last couple of years. We talk about emerging missions, but a lot of what we're talking about is the change that's occurring as a result of the drawdown from the war. And, you know, we're still engaged. We're still a nation in war, the longest war this nation has ever fought. But we are drawing down, and we want to, we know we're going to change. We know that the budget is a challenge for our country, and it too is a challenge for our military and the Department of Defense. So we know that we're going to have fewer dollars in the future. So, you know, one of the things we've tried, and we continue to try, to prepare ourselves for those new missions. We don't want to, you know, prepare ourselves to fight the war of yesterday. We want to prepare ourselves and position ourselves so that we can take advantage of the requirements that there are for the, you know, for the future, whether that's, you know, the war fight against terror, you know, whatever other enemy, cyber warfare, or whatever the case may be. So that if we can prepare ourselves for those emerging missions, if we can successfully be assigned those missions, we'll continue to be a relevant force. And that's key. You know, relevancy is ever so important in today's world. The third goal is to strengthen the National Guard community. And really what that means is to provide the resources, the tools, the programs so that our National Guard community, our soldiers, our airmen, their families, employers, others too, are resilient so that when things do occur, no matter what it is, you know, we are prepared for them, we can handle it, you know, we can continue to succeed. We want to ensure the well-being of our soldiers, our airmen, and their families as well. So, you know, we want to do everything we can to, you know, to develop that leadership, again, throughout the organization, and do it in a manner that we're strengthening our community, our organization, so that we can continue to be successful into the future. Fourth goal is to forge and maintain partnerships. And your being here today is just one example of you know, what we, as a joint executive council, have encouraged our leaders throughout the organization to do. You know, be involved with, you know, legislators, be involved with committees, be involved with the community, form those partnerships at the local level. This morning, I think members of the Military Affairs Committee from Devil's Lake are going to join you for, you know, a short time, I think during lunch. We've been very active in, you know, in that particular committee as well as committees like that elsewhere. So we have, you know, we encourage partnerships at the local level so that, you know, the people of North Dakota know and understand who the National Guard is. We encourage those partnerships overseas as well. And, you know, North Dakota is the first state to have three countries as state partners, program that goes back more than 20 years, shortly after the fall of the Berlin Wall. It was recognized that there was an opportunity to partner with the Eastern European countries that were part of the former Soviet bloc. And I think it was in 92, the first partnerships were formed, including, interestingly, Ukraine, Belarus, and that's the other little country up in that area. Countries that, you know, we still have a partnership with today, and some of the activities that are going on today in Ukraine and in that area, you know, really are being offset by some of the activities of these state partnerships. Today there are 69 partnerships around the world. As I said, North Dakota is the only state that literally has three countries. That just happened 2 months ago. We've had a partnership with Ghana in Africa for 10 years, and we just recently picked up Togo and Benin. And that's part of our nation's diplomatic efforts around the world to maintain peace. And we have soldiers, airmen coming and going to Ghana, Togo, and Benin, and you know, strengthening a relationship. So that's another, you know, level of partnership, obviously at the global level, but equally important to what we do at the local level. And the fifth goal is simply to act as effective stewards of our resources. And when we talk about the resources, it's those resources that are provided to us by the federal government, the equipment, the facilities, the you know, the budget. It's also when we talk about stewardship of our resources, the stewardship of environment as well. You know, we certainly, you know, want to be able to do whatever we need to do from a training standpoint to be prepared, but when we do it, we want to make sure that we do it in an environmentally safe manner, because we want to be able to continue to, you know, to train in those areas. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's a snapshot of our strategic goals, our strategic plan and vision. For each of these goals, you know, there are a number of objectives that, you know, get into greater detail, and what we are striving for is that each of our soldiers and our airmen, you know and understand what we're trying to do and why. And and part of you know, our reason for doing this is that, you know, obviously if we don't know where we want to be, you know, we're not going to know if we're successful or not. We know times are changing. We know that there are going to be challenges and issues facing us. And if we have a good idea of the direction we want to take, you know, we'll continue to be successful. And when I say that, you know, I emphasize the success of our young men and women, our soldiers and airmen. We talk about challenges, we talk about issues, I'm sure each of you have heard a lot about, you know, what is happening with our nation's military, the drawdown, as I mentioned earlier, the reduced budgets. And in the last couple of years, a lot of the focus was on the Air Force and the Air National Guard. You know, unfortunately, very sadly, it was a year ago, a little over a year ago, that the last manned aircraft from Fargo, from the Air National Guard, the 119th Wing, was flown out of Fargo. Sadly, we became the only state without a manned flying mission in the Air Guard. But we have two other missions that are both emerging, cutting-edge missions. You know, the one is the unmanned aerial vehicle mission, the Predator, since 2007, and we weren't the first, we were the second state National Guard to begin flying Predators, remotely piloting Predators from the continental U.S. overseas in theater. And we have been doing that ever since, 365 days a year. The 119th Wing at Fargo continues to pilot, remotely pilot aircraft around the world, primarily in the Middle East. And in addition, we are just now standing up a component in the Air National Guard that will address part of the cyber mission. And the cyber threat is very real to our, to our nation. The Department of Defense, the military is becoming more involved in providing for those means of protecting our nation when it comes to cyber activities. Our people will be involved in a new mission. It's a cyber mission that relates to targeting, and we just now are having young men and women come back from the initial training. They're excited about it, and it is truly, it's a cutting-edge mission for the future. We will continue to, to look for opportunities if they should come up for a manned flying mission. We still have a number of people that would like to do that, but we have a lot of young people that are excited about the missions we have at hand. We went through the sort of the transformation on the air side over the last couple of years. We're now faced with a similar situation when we talk about the Army National Guard. And on the Army National Guard, within the Army National Guard, we're all of the adjutants general and the National Guards are sort of in a battle with, with the active component. We know we have to draw down, and we're talking about, I think it's 60,000-70,000 positions on the active duty side. We're talking about roughly 20,000 positions on the National Guard side. For us here in North Dakota, and when we talk about the next round of rebalancing, of reduction, we're probably going to, well, I shouldn't say probably, we know we're going to see the loss of about 220 of our authorized positions in the Army National Guard. That's 220 out of roughly 3,300 to 3,400. As it turns out, it will impact at least five different units. We have no control over some of that. We're trying to negotiate on a piece of it, and that will impact a number of our communities. Those reductions will begin to occur starting in October of this year and occur over the next year or so. And we've got some tough decisions to make because we have the flexibility to move units within the state, but some of the units that are being impacted are the ones that we have small numbers in a detachment. We're talking about that some of the smaller communities, the Rugby's, the Botno, those come to mind, Grafton. So we're trying to address what do we do. And I'll be honest with you, as we look at it, we've got to be concerned about our ability to train our soldiers so that they can be prepared and they can carry out a mission successfully and safely. We closed two armories last year, Hazen and Cavalier, and I'm afraid that we may end up continuing to have to do that because of this reduction that's coming our way. In the case of Cavalier, we were literally down to 16 soldiers. It was a small detachment, a quartermaster unit, and none of the soldiers lived in Cavalier. The mayor is, he used to be in the National Guard, and he and I were visiting, and he said when he was in the National Guard back in the 70s and early 80s, you know, they had over 60 soldiers in that unit, and almost everyone was from, you know, from Cavalier or the immediate vicinity. So things have really changed, and our soldiers drive on average, it's nearly 50 miles to drill, just because of the way we're structured and so on. Hazen had, they actually had about 25 or 26 soldiers, but again, none of them lived in Hazen, in that area. They were coming from all around. So, you know, we made the decision to close those two armories. I talked to the legislators representing those armories, and or those communities. I talked to the mayors beforehand, and, you know, they said, you know, I mean, there's nothing we can really say. You know, times have changed. So I'm afraid we may end up, you know, having to do the same, especially now with this reduction in the next round. There's a further reduction beyond the next 2 years that's being discussed. If sequestration continues, then that reduction will occur. It will be about another 230 soldiers or so. You know, obviously having even more impact, you know, across the state. When we talk about closing or losing, that'd be the better way to describe it, losing some of these units, we also are talking about losing some of the full-time positions we have, and it could be up to 60 full-time positions. So one of the things that's important to us is to communicate to our soldiers, to the communities, to the families as well, what we're faced, what we're facing, and the direction that we may have to take. But, you know, that's where we're at today. Those are some of the challenges and issues that we face. You know, having said that, Camp Grafton continues to be a very viable and relevant training facility. You know, as I mentioned this morning, we've got people here from all across the country, and you know, North Dakota and the Regional Training Institute is recognized as an educational institution of excellence, and that's why we continue to exist and thrive, and we don't see that ending anytime soon at all, because you know, nobody does it better than the people of, you know, the soldiers and airmen of the North Dakota National Guard. So, Mr. Chairman, the members of the committee, I'd be glad to try to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Lauzer has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. General, you touched on cyber warfare a couple times, and I've heard from a number of military leaders, both retired and active, that that's a bigger threat than we're acknowledging. I think it's probably one of the two biggest threats in future warfare that we're facing. And we're hearing that we're a premier facility, but we're sending people away for training. What is the possibility of us having a cyber warfare training facility either here or in North Dakota?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lauzer, you know, you're absolutely right in your assessment of the cyber threat. I mean, it's real, it's huge, and it's constant. The fact is, you know, we have put in a bid, if you will, for a cyber training area in North Dakota. We're competing with just about everyone else. You know, what is the possibility? I think, you know, it's maybe slim that we would get one, but you know, we're not giving up. But right now, you know, everyone is beginning to recognize the significance, and you know, doing everything they can to, you know, to pull people in. One of our arguments is that, you know, the second largest Microsoft campus outside of Redmond, Washington, is in Fargo. We have universities that you know, are training young men and women in that particular field. So, you know, we think we have a lot going for us, but you know, we're competing with virtually every other state.
I can continue, and I guess specific to this property, is there capability at Camp Grafton to do something similar?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lauzer, I don't know exactly what our access to the backbone for the, you know, for the internet is here. I know it's limited compared to other places in the state. That's not to say that it couldn't be, you know, couldn't be built up. There certainly are things that could be done, but you know, we'll continue to explore that option, because it is, you know, it is the future at this point, and anything we can do to, you know, secure training facilities, you know, we will make that effort. Anything we can do to secure units that have cyber as a mission, you know, we'll continue to pursue as well.
Representative Kaiser.
And you don't have to answer this, General, if you don't want, but do you think there might be somewhat of a delay on the drawdown, given what's happened in Iraq in the last 36 hours?
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Kaiser, I honestly don't know. You know, it's obviously it's a decision well above my pay grade. You know, with what's happening, that could be, you know, a turn of events to change things around. But the challenge, of course, is the budget. And, you know, the Department of Defense, especially with sequestration, is taxed with a very significant reduction. So, you know, in order to slow that drawdown, it really has to be addressed as a budget issue.
Is there further questions? I've got one, and it doesn't seem relevant, but it does. I mean, you're obviously downsizing in a sense, but when we talk about all our employers are having a hard time getting people, I mean, there's a shortage of workforce, and obviously you want to recruit a certain level of candidate or soldier. Are you having any issues or foresee issues getting the caliber of people you want in the future?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll give you a little bit of history and you know, address where we're at today. We, you know, began to see a challenge in terms of recruiting back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Then after 9/11, we began to see an uptick in the in our ability to recruit. What we found, and this was true across the nation, is that, you know, young men and women wanted to serve their nation, recognizing we were a nation at war, and wanted to deploy. That continued till it was 2010, I think. 10, that's about right. In 2010, we had the best recruiting year that we had had for nearly 20 years. Then we came out of Iraq, and almost immediately, we began to see some challenges and some issues in our ability to recruit. On the retention side, we expected much greater losses once we became engaged in the war fight. And at one point, I remember having conversations where we might lose 25% to 30% of our force. That didn't happen. Previous to 9/11, we were typically losing in the neighborhood of 10% to 11%. And when I say losing, that was in retirements as well as people just not reenlisting. That jumped up from 10 or 11 to about, I think it was 14-15%. Not much of a difference. So since 2010, after we came out of Iraq, or 2011, we have had some challenges, and the, you know, the greatest challenge is in is competing with others. We in the oil fields in the West, you know, we're having some difficulties. Young men and women can, you know, drop out of high school and start driving a truck for $80,000 a year. You know, they don't necessarily look at the National Guard as an opportunity to take advantage of at that point. So, you know, today our recruiting is fairly stable, but our success in recruiting is not as good as it was just a few years ago. We're authorized roughly 3,400 on the Army side. Right now we're at about 3,200. And that's down about 100, you know, roughly 100 from where it was in the last several years. And part of that is, there's no question, is it's competing with others for that young man or young woman.
Okay. Is there any other questions for the General? Or any other comments by you, General? Or otherwise, I want to thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and I thank all of you for being here. We're proud of Camp Grafton, as you probably can sense, and anytime we can have people come on to the post, see what we have, see what we do, and talk to our young men and women, you know, it makes us feel good. Mr. Chairman, before you break for lunch, and I think that's about where we're at.
We're at that point, yes.
Okay, and I know you are ahead of schedule. Our camp commander, Lieutenant Colonel Clark Johnson, is here. And, you know, with your concurrence, what I'd like to do is have Clark give you an overview of Camp Grafton, what we do and what we have here, and he certainly can do it much better than I.
I appreciate that. And I also want to welcome Senator Lee. She's joining us for the rest of the day.
Yeah, good morning, committee members, ladies and gentlemen. Lieutenant Colonel Clark Johnson. I met a few of you last night, echo what General Spitznadik said. Thank you for taking the time to come to camp. I do have a couple of things. One is kind of a historical, just a little brochure with history of camp and some of the facilities. And I know we, those of you that were here last night heard some of that. I'll just set them on the table here. You can take those as you desire. And a little over a year ago, we threw together just a little trifold pamphlet with some general information on camp, and I'll hand that out to you. I think it could possibly be a good reference for the tour, and also take these with you for down the road. Thank you, Representative Steiner. Appreciate it.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Chairman and members, this brochure basically just gives a real quick overview. And what if, I guess, again, we talked a lot about the history of camp. And, you know, we like to celebrate our history and our traditions here at camp in the North Dakota Guard and in the military in general. But we're continually looking forward and striving to improve ourselves and keep ourselves relevant. And what I do here at camp as the commander is take the strategic objectives that you heard General Spitznadek talk about and focus on what we can do here at camp to maintain that relevance and keep growing ourselves. As part of the tour, of course, this afternoon you will get a chance to see the Regional Training Institute, and their staff will give you a lot more details about what they do. But that is by far the biggest activity here is what the schoolhouse here and the activities that that they're involved with. And probably the one thing I'd like you to focus on there is. Out in the public, you hear a lot about, well, the wars are over, we're winding down the wars. Well, actually, you know, the North Dakota Guard still has units deployed and getting ready to deploy. But the schoolhouse specifically, just in the last month, has hosted groups of soldiers from four different states that they had units alerted or preparing to mobilize, and they needed to send soldiers up here for training in a certain task or skill. And that continues and probably will continue. So not just as a state asset, but for our national strategy, the Regional Training Institute is a very important part of Camp Grafton and probably the most important facility here and asset here at camp. And at the bottom of that first page, you see the Readiness Center where we're currently sitting. In the center of the top of the center page, you see a photo of soldiers using the engagement skills training facility. You'll get a chance to look at that this afternoon. And then just an example of a classroom with a computer training lab. On the right side, on the inside, you see some soldiers on ranges. That's a range facility down at Camp Grafton South, which is approximately 20 miles east of New Rockford. It's about a 40 minutes south of here, where we have all our ranges and training areas. And then, of course, some photos of some non-North Dakota Guardsmen that train here at camp. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. In order to keep ourselves relevant and continue to grow the activities that we do here at Camp Grafton, as General Spitznadek said, you know, the North Dakota National Guard, just because of what's going on, is going to be downsizing. We market ourselves as much as possible to non-traditional users, to include states from outside of North Dakota. We currently have a unit from South Dakota doing training here, and we continually market that. And the Regional Training Institute being an engineer schoolhouse, plus all of the engineer-specific type of training areas that we have to offer here at camp, and you will see some of those this afternoon also, that's a big draw. A lot of units from a lot of states don't have those assets in their state. We have them here. And again, we continue to market ourselves to draw those units in from out of state. State agencies, we've got a great relationship with the North Dakota DOT. They conduct training here. They have two big training events in every year. One in the spring, one in the fall. Operator training, safety training, things like that. And they love coming to camp because it's a nice consolidated area. They can get together, and we offer an environment for them, the types of roads, things like that, that they can do training on. They're also here other times of the year doing training. North Dakota Highway Patrol. And as you can see in that photo, you know, we've got various SWAT teams and other law enforcement that comes here to camp regularly to use our ranges and do training here. We also are developing a partnership with some different universities, specifically here in Devil's Lake, North Dakota Train East, ND Train East, and we are looking at what we can do to support them for some taskings they've gotten for operator training, truck driver training, things like that. We cannot provide a lot of the assets and the actual individuals to conduct that training because of our federal mission, but we do have the real estate that they can use for that type of training that they want to do. United States Air Force, we've got the Minot and Grand Forks Air Base. They utilize our facilities all the time. And Camp Grafton here in Devil's Lake and Camp South, about 40 miles south of here, aren't the only entities or assets we have. We actually have three local training areas in North Dakota. Camp Davis, which is just north of Valley City. Douglas Creek training area, which is right on Lake Sakakawea, south of Garrison. And then out by Williston, the Williston local training area. Those training areas are mostly used by the units close to that location. However, the Air Force uses those facilities quite often. And we have other state and federal agencies that use those areas. For example, we partner with different state and local and federal agencies for domestic operations training, like wildland fire training, things like that, out at our local training areas. And those fall under the umbrella of Camp Grafton. If you go to the back page, you can see some of the things here at Camp Grafton that we provide. Those of you that stayed overnight, hopefully your accommodations were up to snuff. And we also have a post exchange. It's a branch based out of the air bases that operates, again, for soldiers to get amenities. And we have a couple of fitness rooms here at camp, of course, for soldiers and other users to maintain fitness. And on the back page, you see a picture of Tracy Chapel. You'll get a tour of that this afternoon. Facility here that we have a full-time chaplain on staff for any kind of soldier issues that come up that might want to see a chaplain. And then again, getting into the some of the non-traditional users we have. Looking into the future, again, we're focused on preparing our training area, Camp Grafton, to maintain our relevancy in the future. That future is somewhat nebulous, kind of cloudy right now, but again, if we're positioned for these upcoming missions and other things, you know, we feel we can provide training that's second to none in the nation, and be that jewel on the prairie, that training area that anybody from inside or outside of North Dakota wants to come to. And we do have some challenges with that. For example, our range complex down at Camp South. Right now, currently, and this is for several reasons, we cannot fire every weapon that North Dakota units currently have. For example, the 50 caliber machine gun, we can't currently fire that at Camp South. They have to go out of state for that. And some other limitations on our range complex. We've identified those. We'd like to, we're working to do what we can to solve those problems. And again, keep focused on maintaining our relevance and being that one-stop shop for anybody, any unit that wants to come here. Members of the committee, Chairman, I guess I'll open it up for questions. I wasn't prepared for this, but I'll do my best.
That's a high one from the sign. Is there a question? Chairman,
Mr. Chairman, when other states send their troops here for training, how do they reimburse us?
I'm not an accountant, but I can give you the you know, how I understand that it's a process. Each state has a property and fiscal office that basically is the accountant for the state. And so when an outside unit comes in, we calculate the cost of training that unit down to the payroll for the soldiers that we have or the staff we have to support that, the equipment they use, the food they eat, the gas, everything. We calculate that, and we send that, our state sends that to their state, and then it's reimbursed.
Representative Mooney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm curious, what are the specific limitations that prohibit you from being able to shoot or use particular ammunition?
Sure, thank you. Probably the biggest is land. Of course, we have what's called a surface danger zone. Anytime you fire a weapon, that bullet can go so far. And so land is the limitation. With a big weapon like the 50 caliber machine gun, that bullet can go a long ways. And we just do not have the land at Camp South. There are some other mitigating circumstances as far as Army or DOD regulations that we're also working on, but the land is the number one, the biggest one.
Any other questions? If not, thank you. And thank you for the hospitality. So
yeah, thank you. I look forward to joining you on the tour this afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
And is there anything else?
I have the next guest, sir.
You want to?
I have a whole flock of soldiers out there waiting to start our legislative days, basically. And your first stop is, I just want to tell you that we'll help you break down, Alex and Alan, afterwards, tear everything down. But you're free to leave everything up here. You need no money from this point forward for the next few hours because we get the meals ready to eat. So I just want to make sure everybody's prepared for this. And that in about an hour and a half, we get that they have fresh biscuits they just made at the cook school. So I probably have a little jelly left over. It's very, very good. So we're going to go down from here, and we're going to get in the big blue bus. And we have a major and a sergeant first class waiting to take us on a little excursion before lunch, and it's going to be at one of the training sites where we're bridging. So that's going to be a bonus. We're going to have everybody get on the bus, and I'll have trail vehicles so that we'll pick up. We know there's more people coming up here. We'll meet you out there, and it's about 3 minutes out that way. And at noon, basically who's sitting on the right side of the bus is going to be, say, group one, left side group two. And we're going to get you eating with soldiers that are digging up grounds and making a plan. Two totally different things. So if any questions, I think.
But we will end up near this site. So you said we can leave our bags,
sir,
and everything.
Yes, sir.
And the other thing, since we are going to technically be adjourning because we're not going to come back in, we can go more casual. I think it sounds like it fit the tour a little bit. So I'm dropping my tie and coat. I guess everybody else can feel free to do that if they want as we go forward here. So,
and we will be eating outside on the lawn on picnic benches. So.
Okay.
Okay, sir.
So how about we give everybody about 5 minutes or so if they want to go take a break or something, and then we meet out at the bus.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.